Yes, we're in the man cave. Sarah Katie's here, post UFC 163, right after the event. What an awesome event it was. I was an event early on my shoulder popping prediction, Sammer.
Wait, yeah, what was you predicted that Chris Weidman was going to pop his shoulder right against Anderson?
Yeah.
Well, in hindsight, I wish that had happened. No, I mean, that's not nice. Come on. The guy is the champion. Maybe it's time we accept it. I still haven't, by the way. I'm really still haven't accepted that Chris Weidman is the UFC middleweight champion. I don't think anybody is. I mean, I know, you know,
you were hoping to go. Chris Weidman wins the rematch.
Exactly. It really, really is. You know, it's sort of like professional wrestling where you're like, you want your rematch clause the next night, but except that y'all know that he's not going to regain his title, right? Like,
no, it's like Kane and Stone Cold Steve Austin. Remember they had the match?
Yeah, he won it at King of the Ring, right? And then the next night they just switched back, so.
Yeah, Kane was the champion for 24 hours, that poor guy.
Well, at least Chris Weidman is going to be the champion. I mean, he might win the rematch, who knows. But it just seems, I know you were hoping you were going for a different direction with that intro. Actually, I'm sure you didn't have a direction, but.
I never have a direction.
I know. But it's totally unrelated to this card. But I just find it's unfair to Chris Weidman and everything, but it's bizarrely amusing how, you know, Anderson Silva dominates the sport for years and does things we've never really seen or thought was possible in a way that I don't think anybody's going to be able to replicate. I mean, you never want to say that. You don't know. But it's going to be really damn hard for somebody to do what this guy's done. And then you always think in your head that when time does finally come and somebody does dethrone him, you know, that guy is going to get essentially at least champion treatment, right? And nobody seems to bother to even mention Chris Weidman. I mean, it just, I'm not sure. I wouldn't say it's odd, especially given the circumstances and how it happened. But I think even Dana White, by being like essentially pressuring Anderson into a rematch, according to pretty much everybody that's close to Anderson, they're saying the same thing. Essentially, even Dana White is struggling to accept, I guess. The one who took it best was Anderson Silva. Still is.
Dana White's struggling to accept a lot of things.
Yeah, I'm hoping he struggled to accept how bad this card was.
Oh, this card was awesome. Main event, Jose Aldo, Korean Zombie. Apparently, Aldo hurt his foot on the first kick he threw, and so that made him fight like a fucking wrestler. My theory is that he saw the fight beforehand. He was like, this striking bullshit doesn't win anything. I might as well go for takedowns. But Jose Aldo was not the Jose Aldo we expect. Very boxing-centric approach. Again, he threw like two kicks, I think, the entire fight, until Zombie popped his shoulder out, throwing a punch, and then he threw like three straight kicks to that shoulder. He was like, shit, I see this target. You mentioned that's Killer Instinct right there. Yeah, he popped his shoulder, and Aldo immediately just started kicking at it. He's like a great pro wrestling heel. Like, the guy hurts his knee, and then he immediately gets his knee attacked. That's what Jose Aldo did here. The first four rounds, I guess it went deep into the fourth round. They kind of sucked, I thought. There weren't anything special. Maybe sucked is an overstatement, but it wasn't anything too special, and then Korean Zombie popped his shoulder out, throwing an overhand right. Aldo kicked him, took him down, beat on him, and finally Herb Dean was like, oh, this guy appears to be hurt. Let me stop this fight. And that was that. And they didn't allow Aldo to run into the crowd, which would have been the best moment on the show.
I think he was too tired to do that. I think he would have stopped midway through.
Security stopped him.
I think once they did, he realized, oh, thank God, that's a good idea. He was way too tired to do that. I mean, actually, okay, I don't want to talk about that before talking about the fight itself, even though there's not much to talk about as far as the fight is concerned, but I want to touch on this when I'm done. As far as the fight goes, yeah, I mean, it was whatever, really. I mean, I hate to sound so dismissive of the whole thing, but it was a fairly uneventful fight for the most part. Not much was going on. You know, Aldo would throw a jab every now and then, follow it with a right cross. No leg kicks, as you mentioned, apparently hurt his foot early on. So that explains that, especially with Korean Zombie just looking so chill in that mid-range and just even though he was doing nothing, you'd think that, you know, Aldo could ruin this guy's night right now with a, you know, with four leg kicks, according to Kenny Florence. Isn't that the number he gave?
Yeah.
Sorry. Excuse me. Okay. So, yeah, I mean, no, but you know what I mean. Like, a few leg kicks could have not just, it's not just about chomping down his legs, but you thought they would have opened him up some more, because even though Aldo was landing whenever he was throwing, you know, a jab would land, he would follow it up with like a right cross or something, but it was very rarely anything substantial. I mean, at one point he switched, he went like with a sweet combination to the body, but still, I mean, it was a fairly pedestrian performance by Aldo's standards even before he started fatiguing and just being essentially winded. I don't know if it's a leg injury or whatever, but let's face it, or the foot injury, sorry, but you don't want to give him a pass on every single performance. That's what I said. Since signing with the UFC, Aldo has looked winded in all of his fights with the exception of the one fight that ended in the first round. I mean, the weight cut is clearly becoming too much on him. That is a fact. So, and I want to expand upon that in a moment. But, you know, that happened against Hominick, that happened against Florian. I even mentioned it in the preview for this fight how, you know, against Frankie Edgar, he had to essentially take a couple of rounds off so just so that he would, you know, regain his essentially a second wind and just, you know, finish strong, which he did. But you can't afford to risk doing that in every single fight. I mean, the level of his competition is increasing. You're not just going to finish them by flipping a switch the way he was early on in his WEC days. So even at one point in this fight, you thought he was in trouble. Like, not that he was going to lose or anything, but it suddenly became a much bigger possibility. Like, when Korean Zombie went after him and Aldo just swung wildly and very, very slowly and seemed to just, like, take a very deep breath after that combination, which obviously missed horribly. So you thought, you know, there's still, like, 10 minutes of this. I mean, this can be potentially very dangerous. And you knew that Zombie wasn't going to pick up on that. He had suddenly started becoming more aggressive. And it seemed to have, if this was his game plan somehow, because he did seem awfully chill early on the first three rounds. If that was his game plan, I'll say this, it seemed to be a very smart game plan. Maybe I'm giving him too much credit. Maybe he was just hesitant and tentative because he had too much respect for Aldo's power and striking ability. And I think that definitely would have been the case. I mean, if Zombie believed in his chances to win earlier, I think he would have been more aggressive earlier. But let's face it, you know, Chan Sun Jung, actually, I'm not going to call him by his name. Korean Zombie's...
Yeah, nobody else.
So he's no dummy. He probably knew that just chilling in that mid-range, he's not going to beat Aldo in a quote-unquote technical battle. He's not going to jab him to death. He's not even going to be able to escape his jab. Like, whenever Aldo threw a jab, I think he was like, he landed every single one. He was just not doubling up on them or following him with combinations or anything. And that was really the kind of puzzling part about his performance. But they seem to be, like, you wouldn't think it's advisable for somebody to be within that range with Jose Aldo. I mean, Kenny Florian, actually, and yeah, and Frankie Edgar, they both circled a lot. And I know that's not Korean Zombie style at all, obviously, but his style is just to move forward and be aggressive. And obviously, you don't want to do that early neither, because you know Aldo's counter punching is that good. So it seemed to be a dilemma early on where, you know, every time he moved forward, you knew, okay, there is a chance he might catch him in like a wild exchange, and turning it into a firefight would have been his best chance to win. It's also his best chance to get knocked out, and it happens to be an even bigger chance for him to get knocked out than to actually, you know, catch Aldo with something. So it was kind of a dilemma for Zombie. Like, do you just stand there and get picked apart, even though Aldo wasn't really especially being especially active or anything? He still was obviously winning the fight handily. So if you're Korean Zombie, it seemed like there wasn't much you could do. So I really do believe that part of his plan was to rally late in the fight as Aldo tires. And, you know, it's not like you can even say, oh, well, how is he going to know that Aldo's going to fatigue? Well, because, you know, it happened in three of his UFC fights already, three of his four UFC fights up until this one. And, you know, actually this one was no exception either. So that is obviously a problem for Aldo. And you'd hate to see him lose his belt or, like, lose altogether because of that. Because let's face it, I mean, every single fight he's going to be in is going to be five rounds. So, I mean, it is a problem if you're Aldo. And it needs to be addressed, whether by moving up or not. But, you know, just a couple of last words about this fight. So if I'm, like, I can't be too harsh on Korean Zombie's performance, actually. I mean, I generally think this would have been his plan. I mean, if that fight had somehow dragged on for another two rounds and he just stood there doing nothing, then yeah, then I guess criticism would have been warranted. But it wouldn't surprise me if that was his plan. As far as Aldo goes, I mean, again, it was pedestrian. It wasn't very active. Foot injury or not, he seemed to be, just from the get-go, I mean, though by all accounts, the injury did come very, very early. But still, there was something missing about him. He didn't have the usual spring to his step. He wasn't as dynamic. He wasn't even moving as much. It's actually a stance he started adopting far more since using KFC. It's more flat-footed, but he still moves in circles, but he stands more in front of you with, like, I don't want to pull a Mike Goldberg, but the traditional Muay Thai stance. It's obviously not a traditional Muay Thai stance, but it's closer to that than what you usually see in MMA. Fighters are light on their feet, and Aldo can be, and he does it a lot of times. Against Edgar, for example, he was far lighter on his feet because he realized that Edgar could at any moment could switch levels, plant him on his back, and Edgar moves a lot, so he countered that. So I think it's really cool that Aldo, it's smart, it's more than cool, I guess. It's really smart. It's a sign, it's a testament to him being really good, and obviously it's a testament to his intelligence, that he adjusts his stance according to his opponent, basically. You know, against Mark Hominick and Korean Zombie, he realized that he was coming up against flat-footed opponents, and he knew that, you know, he can beat them just essentially by being not necessarily in close quarters, but in that mid to close distance, and it would actually maximize his chances of just landing and hurting them. Obviously, that didn't turn out so well in this fight because for some reason he wasn't doing much. But yeah, as the fight went on, it really started becoming bit tedious, I have to say. Like, although the problem is with, like, the takedowns, all right, it's fine if you get tired and you take the takedown opportunity when it's presented to you, but in that third round when he was just pushing and just working so hard to secure that takedown, it's counterproductive because you're really gassing yourself out some more. You're exerting a bigger effort, basically. Although the flip side of that is that you don't risk getting your head carved in because, you know, your opponent can't punch you. But it's still very dangerous. On a side note, I loved how Korean Zombie's corner freaked out when Aldo grabbed his glove. You know, they were against the cage, and you just hear, glove, 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 as if it was like, bomb, 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 it's about to explode. I mean, all right, it is illegal, but he's not going to die if he touches his glove. So, but I thought that's funny.
Hey, because maybe he grabbed the glove and he tweaked his shoulder a little bit, and that led to the shoulder pop.
Yeah, he laid the foundation.
Yeah.
Maybe it's an elaborate plan by Aldo. And Korean Zombie's corner, they were smart. They recognized that.
I would file a protest.
Dude, but you need... Oh, okay. Obviously, it's not worth rewatching it for, but just see how they freaked out as if there was a bomb threat in the arena. It was hilarious, actually. But I mean, good on them. That is good cornering, you know, pressuring the referee. Not Jared Shaw, though, when Kimbo Slice was allegedly punched in the back of the head. You know what I'm talking about, right? Yeah, it was amazing promoting, actually. But or match fixing. That's what I should call it. Fight fixing. So yeah, I mean, it's hard to find the silver lining in Aldo's performance, but him recognizing that Korean Zombie's injury took place, and I mean, obviously Korean Zombie initially wasn't very subtle about it with the way he tweaked his shoulder and just started kind of rolling it around, and I mean, you can't blame the guy, obviously. I'm not saying you should have concealed it, because you're not really thinking about it at that moment. You want to get a feel for your shoulder and just see. Sure, pull a John Fitch. Remember when John Fitch did that?
Was it John Fitch?
Yeah, it was John Fitch very early on in his UFC career. And I remember, like, when he was fighting George St. Pierre, I was like, this guy is good, but I can't take him seriously after he called a timeout midway through the fight. And then against George St. Pierre, he proceeds to look like the Terminator. And then everybody's perception of John Fitch changed. And that's, you know, after that, everybody went back to believing he's boring. But at least it wasn't like, oh, this is the wimp who called a timeout. I'll tell you which fight it was. I'll just look it up quickly. Anyway, so, yeah. Talking about, what was I talking about? That completely threw me off. I'm sorry. Oh, the finish.
So,
obviously, and, you know, he wanted to see how bad it was, which is understandable. But props to Aldo to even see it, because Herb Dean sure didn't. The best referee in the business missed it completely. But Aldo, I mean, he not only recognized it, but he went after it. Because suddenly, it's weird, because suddenly there was a flip, and suddenly Aldo was actually aggressive, and he threw like three high kicks in a row that initially, obviously, as the fight was taking place, before we actually knew what was going on, I couldn't really test. Thought he was just throwing high kicks and they're getting blocked, or body kicks and they're getting blocked. But the way he threw three left high kicks in a row with this sense of urgency makes sense in hindsight. And then he would immediately take him down. And as he took him down, he started beating him up as if he had hurt him first. You know, like, you know, when a fighter hurts somebody, you drop him and then you freak out with punches. That's how Aldo approached it. And I was trying to get odd as that was happening. I was like, dude, you just secured a takedown. No need to gas yourself out. But then he started landing, and then the fight ended, and it seemed anticlimactic. But, you know, after seeing the replay and knowing what we know, it made perfect sense. So at least there's that. You know, this is killer instinct, and this is champion stuff by Aldo. This is what, you know, this is part of being the champion, finding a way to win, even when you're not performing to the best of your abilities, even when you're tired with an injured leg or whatever. Essentially, I don't want to say his title reign was in jeopardy, because, you know, he was three rounds up, let's be honest. But there was a possibility of that being some really potentially tricky 10 minutes for Aldo. And he dodged a few mines there by doing what he did and recognizing that his opponent was injured and capitalizing on that and really showing no remorse. And obviously this isn't the sport for remorse, so... I mean, I'll give him major props for that, for recognizing it and going after it. Because initially he was just punching him in the head after he took him down. Then he switched to the hammer fist to the shoulder. And that's when Herb Dean immediately sensed that something was wrong. I don't know if maybe Zombie verbally tapped. I'm strongly sensing that. I don't know. What was the official and Bruce Buffer announcement? Did he say TKO or verbal tap out?
I think because, he said TKO.
Okay, because the ref would have informed him. So if it was a verbal tap out. But, you know, at least Herb Dean realized it at that moment. So, yeah, I mean, disappointing fight, anticlimactic finish, but a smart finish from a mental perspective for Aldo to just notice that and go after it. But it was still a very disappointing fight, let's be honest.
Yeah, I don't think Aldo's going up to 155 anytime soon. Maybe
Sure. You really should. It was just on a side note. It was against Roan Carneiro. That's the fight in which John Fitch called for timeout. Ironically, it's a fight he finished, so it worked.
Yeah, he should call timeout more often. Shit.
Yeah.
He
took an extended timeout against Josh Berkman, though. Took a nap.
In the rematch, yeah.
Yeah.
A long timeout. I'm not sure he's ever gonna be back after that timeout.
Nope. Didn't Dana White tell you his career is downward sloping? Yeah. Turns out he's right, actually.
Yeah, I don't know about Aldo going up to 155. He's actually got some contenders that he's already killed at 145. He's got some good fights with Lamas. Cub Swanson's looked really good as of late. I wouldn't mind seeing that rematch. Frankie Edgar's still there. The loser of Anthony Pettis and Ben Henderson can drop down and get immediate title shot, so... There's some guys at 145.
No. My thought process
is
simply for Aldo's sake, not whether there are contenders or not. I mean, it's just that he's risking much by staying at 145 because the weight cut is just way too great.
They said he did well with the weight cut this time.
Does it matter how you do the weight cut? It's come fight time. You fight like a zombie, no pun intended. I mean,
yeah,
at one point it was Aldo
said he did
like
well. They said he took it, you know, he's learned how to cut the weight.
Yeah,
now
because
and
just imagine like his trainers before the fight saying, yeah, you know what? This weight cut has been a tough one. I hope our opponents don't hear us. Come on.
Doing fine with the weight cut, damn it. Yeah, the fight wasn't anything special, but what can you do? I still love Jose Aldo. I'm still excited to see him fight again, but this one, not quite the fight we were hoping for with Zombie being Zombie and Jose Aldo just murdering him.
It was Jose Aldo turning into a zombie and Zombie being a zombie, but a very...
A slow-ass zombie.
Yeah, it was a... Well, zombies are slow, so... Wow, yeah. But it was like... It was a docile, kind of harmless, you know, domesticated zombie.
Zombie was patient.
He was... Yeah, it was like a patient zombie waiting for the apocalypse. I don't know. And then he popped his shoulder like a true zombie, you know, when they're like, their arms just fall off in movies? That's...
Yeah.
So, yeah, he's living up to his moniker, actually.
Co-main event.
Hold
Phil
on,
Davis.
Hold on. I'm not done. I've been hyping this up. Not hyping, but I've been like setting up for talking about Aldo moving up for like since the beginning of the podcast. And then
I thought your whole setup was he needs to move up so the weight cut is hurting him. I thought you were done. Sorry.
Well, I wanted to because I want. What a terrible co-host you are.
I'm the host. You're a guest.
I'm a guest that appears every week. What kind of guest is that? I'm not like, well, yeah, but what am I? I'm not the co-host because you're the host. You set up everything. I'm just the one who talks all the time. So what does that make me?
The guest.
I'm the analyst. That's what I am.
You're the Brian Stan. You talk too fucking much and I don't get to say anything.
Yeah, but actually, well, you know, that's awesome. That's
oh, I know.
Brian Stan had the right, not awesome about our podcast. I'm talking about Brian Stan. I think he had the right idea. Talk a lot. Say
Brian Stan did play by play, color, gave the stats and everything.
You should have just read the one liners. You know, you should have read like the advertisements and whatnot.
Yeah.
Like the shooter coming in theaters. And oh, by the way, Randy Couture just dropped Tim Sylvia, but don't forget to watch that movie. This is amazing, by the way. Keep in mind, everybody. Goldie wants to freak out, but I'm not letting him. And he's really upset over that shooter line. He wanted to say that so bad. But, you know, like, no, seriously, Brian Stan has the right idea. Talk as much as you can to the point where Mike Goldberg shuts the fuck up for the entire night and say mostly a bunch of relatively smart stuff by MMA commentating standards. Because, I mean, there was a Fox show where he was horrible as an analyst. He wasn't doing commentary,
yeah,
but he was doing
Shogun
like...
Yeah, Shogun and Gustafson show.
Yeah.
I don't remember
he was pretty awful. But for this card, actually, even as the... when he was interviewing fighters post-fight, he asked the right question. Like, he even brought up Aldo just kicking Zombie in the shoulder, which not a lot of people had noticed before that. So, you know, he honestly did a fine job. We always bury the commentary.
Maybe Brian
but
Stan is a hero for retiring.
He is a hero.
MMA commentary.
Exactly. He's not the hero we deserve, but the one we need. Or is it the other way around? Oh, he's Batman. That's what he is. Oh, Brian Stan, you white knight, you. I want to just call him the white knight of MMA commentary.
Sure.
That's Brian Stan. Does he have a nickname, by the way?
He's
like
All-American.
Yeah, All-American. Screw that generic nonsense. Yeah.
So does Jack Swagger.
That's true. He stutters. Is Jack Swagger the one who stutters or Zack Ryder? Or not Zack Ryder. It's another dude that...
It was Matt Morgan who did the stuttering gimmick. Jack Swagger has a lisp.
Oh, okay. Well, that sucks.
What was your big Jose Aldo build?
No, it wasn't big or anything, but I wanted to touch on the, oh, he has a few fight lines up because it's been discussed on Twitter. Obviously, you don't follow MMA media people.
Fuck.
You should follow MMA Roasted, though, for amazing, hilarious jokes.
Oh,
hey,
yeah.
You want to feel funny about yourself?
Shoulder against John Jones's toe.
Jesus Christ, that dude doesn't even try. It is awful humor. You know what? Actually, I want to say this for also for this podcast. I want to bury that dude because he blocked me, by the way. He did. He blocked me after that tweet I made about how lame his jokes are. But anyway,
he used to follow me, and then he stopped. Maybe because I didn't follow him back. Because I always thought he was pretty bad with those jokes.
He was awful. He was really awful.
I mean, like, I obviously never read his timeline. Like, some people would retweet it and it'd be like, "That's not very funny." But then, once you said, like, if you like force humor, blah blah blah.
It is so forced, though.
You had that tweet. I checked on his timeline, like, oh, let's see if he responded to Sammer. Then I saw his text from last night column, and I was like, this is the worst piece of shit I've ever seen in my life.
Dude, like, honestly, we make better jokes on this podcast, and we're not particularly funny. We just make each other laugh because we're idiots like that.
Yeah.
But so it's sort of like, or some stuff that nobody else gets, but because you and I joked about it on like a podcast a year and a half ago, and we still remember it somehow, and we end up like laughing. Oh, like, remember when Ben Rotha fought Mark Hunt or whatever? But it's mostly
Ben Rothwell versus Brandon Vera later this month. We have to plug the shit out of it. This is the main event,
you bitches. Because Jeremy and I will be doing live commentary or live cornering, one or the other.
Yeah,
we'll discuss this.
Either
we'll have
way, it's gonna
you know,
be awesome.
There'll be an announcement coming soon. I'll pull a Scott Coker here. A major announcement coming soon.
It's gonna be awesome either way.
Yeah, no, the MMA roasted dude. I'll talk about it a little later as well. Let's just get it done with this like card. I don't want to talk about it anymore. I've heard people saying, oh, you know, Ricardo Lamas is still lined up. Sorry, and a bunch of others. Like, I don't care. You never fully clean out your division. That's the point I was really so desperately trying to make. It's a point I always make. Like this thing where, oh no, he hasn't cleaned it out yet. There's this guy and this guy. Well, you never clean it up fully. There's always somebody winning fights that's going to earn a title shot eventually. Like, put it that way. Let's say John Jones were to dust off Alexander Gustafsson later in this year, right? Is this – it's next month or when? When is that fight?
September.
So it's next month. And let's say that judges weren't completely retarded and scored the fight for Lyoto Machida against Paul Davis tonight. Then suddenly, Machida would be riding a three-fight winning streak, which includes wins over Ryan Bader, Dan Henderson, and Phil Davis. Now, that's a pretty damn impressive list, which beats any light heavyweight run done by any fighter recently not named John Jones. Honestly, it's a pretty damn impressive list. And you'd be like, you know, Lyoto's earned his rematch. Have him fight John Jones. You know, like, nope, hasn't cleaned up the division. Lyoto's earned, like, it doesn't work that way. Even when you do beat a lot of guys, there's always going to be rematch, recycle. George St. Pierre is the best example. Like, this dude beat everybody, then a bunch of rematch, and then now is beating everybody new all over again. And when we were still naive enough to think a fight with Anderson would happen, we started talking about that shit after he beat Thiago Alves in, like, 2009. That's sort of like he cleaned out the division. People are like, no, not really. And then his next fight was against Dan Hardy. You know what? When your next fight is against Dan Hardy, you've cleaned out your division. I'm sorry. So we were right. But then, you know, a bunch of new contenders. Actually, no, because later that year he fought Josh Koscheck again, right? Those are his two fights in 2010. So if you needed proof that he had cleaned out his division, those were the fights. But obviously, during that year, some new guys emerge and start winning fights. So, you know, Jake Shields was signed after that. So suddenly there was Jake Shields. He just beat Martin Kampman in an epic performance. Got to see that fight. You know, wouldn't be, that would really kind of negate his legacy. No, not just that. If he doesn't actually fight Jake Shields, it would just nullify George St. Pierre's entire welterweight run. It would really just hinder his legitimacy. Sorry, he has to fight him. Like, there's always somebody a fight essentially. You do fight after Jake Shields. There was Carlos Condit who had emerged. And you know, that's a great fight. And Carlos Condit, you know, George St. Pierre Carlos Condit was a great fight.
And it benefited, well, didn't benefit, but
George
was out for like a year and a half. So.
But yeah, and a lot of guys. So during that year, Diaz emerged as a contender, even though he lost somehow. And Carlos Condit emerged as a contender. And Johnny Hendricks beat seemingly everybody during that time as well. So my boy Mike Pierce kept quietly doing his business. Silent assassin, herpes Mike Pierce.
Who fucks after Hendricks, though?
Yeah, see, that's what I mean. And there's going to be somebody, like Rory McDonald. You see, like, we want to see that fight. They're teammates, dude, and you know how much people want to see teammates. And even though Rory McDonald could fight somebody else and put on an even bigger stinker than his last fight, people were like, no, We want to see that. We want to see who can, how boring that fight could possibly be. George St. Pierre against Rory McDonald. So you know what I mean? Like, there's always somebody to fight.
Here's the biggest thing. Do you want to see Jose Aldo against Ricardo Lamas, Cub Swanson, or rematch against Frank Yeager or whatever?
Keep in mind, Cub Swanson is a rematch, by the way. It's a rematch of an 8-second fight. So do people really want to see that? It's exactly like your point, because I cut you off. The other option was Ben Henderson or Anthony Pettis. So think about how everybody was excited about Pettis and Aldo before Pettis got injured. You could see that fight at 155, and it would actually make far more sense if that happens over there. So,
oh, it was a work that Anthony Pettis got injured.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it's true. It was all a very convenient setup for him to take on Ben Henderson. And you know what? I'm thrilled. Yeah. I don't want to see Ben Henderson as TJ Grant. I'm sorry.
That's never going to happen. This was planned from day one.
Seriously. This was textbook professional wrestling stuff. Bait and switch. See, this was like Rampage Jackson's going to fight Roy Jones. No, it's Cedar Ortiz. Except this is actually awesome.
Yeah. Rampage. I'd rather see Rampage fight Roy Jones than Cedar Ortiz.
Exactly. That was the other kind of bait and switch where, like, oh, you know, Kevin Nash will be giving Goldberg the rematch. No, finger poke of doom, bitches. That's exactly what this is.
Yeah. I hope Tito and Rampage do a finger poke of doom. That would actually make it awesome.
Oh, dude. You know, they would. I think that would actually sway the ratings their way. It would be like the anti-Monday Night Wars, where they do it and it works. So it would be like the finger poke of awesomeness. No, like, no, it should be like, what's the opposite of doom? Glory, I guess?
Glory.
Yeah, the finger poke of glory. That sounds very nasty, actually.
Yeah, it does. I just thought about it when you said that.
Okay, so moving on.
Phil Davis and Lyoto Machida. Fuck this decision.
God. That, I mean, honestly, that was the first time in a while I feel enraged about MMA. Not to sound too cool for school or anything, but
I didn't.
You know.
I mean, I thought it, you know, obviously I thought the decision sucked. I was praising Phil Davis after two rounds. It's like, oh, he's doing better than I expected him to.
I agree with that, actually.
He still lost those two rounds, but you know, he wasn't doing terrible. He actually got some two takedowns, which was shocking, and apparently that's all you need in these fights nowadays. The third round, he sucked, but I didn't think he did terrible. I still had him losing 30-27. And so when they announced 29-28 unanimous for Phil Davis, I was like, well, that's shitty, this sport. You know, whatever, fucking judges. But then you and other people, you got to retweet media and fighters and Dana White acting like fucking morons. And it's like, God, everyone in this sport sucks.
Exactly. Exactly. That's the thing. When I said, like, you know, first time in a while I feel enraged.
This is why I don't follow fighters and media, because they just kill my passion even more.
I agree with this. I honestly agree with this, though it is addictive. Like, reading stupid stuff is addictive, I have to say. Honestly, I used to follow MMA Roasted. That's better than any of his jokes, and it wasn't even a good joke. So that should tell you everything. So, honestly, we've talked about this before. Like, I've said it maybe like a year and a half ago for the first time. Like, I hate everything about this sport except the fights themselves. And let me clarify. It's not the fight night. No, I hate the fight night. I hate Twitter on fight night. I hate the analysis on fight night. I hate Bruce Buffer on fight night. Commentary on fight night. Dana White taught everything. I just like.
I don't even hate Dana White cornering. He blocked me.
Oh, that's too bad. Well, but see, you should feel Hollywood now. Dana White blocked you. Like, you're a big shot.
Well, you know, everybody.
Yeah, I get blocked by MMA Roasted. You get blocked by Dana White. Think about that. Like, you're a celebrity.
I really don't care what Dana White tweets because, I mean, he tweets.
It's the same shit all the time.
Yeah, and, you know, MMA Supremacy, if he tweets anything, if Dana White tweets anything, like, important, either MMA Supremacy or UFC official account will, like, retweet it. But after the decision, I wanted to see what he tweeted. And I knew he was going to say this, don't leave it in the hands of the judges bullshit, and he did.
Of course he would. Of course he was going to. Like, this is the thing, you say, I don't care what Dana White is going to tweet. Yeah, because you know what? Because, here, let me sum up his Twitter feed. If a great fight is going on, wow, nuts,
balls
awesome. Do you remember when he tweeted nuts and then balls? Like, it was the greatest. Dana White just tweets, nuts, exclamation points, balls. And it was just. Who the hell watches a fight and goes like, oh, this is awesome. You know what? Nuts. Balls. Like, it's not just nuts. It's balls as well. Like, what the fuck does that even mean? But okay, if a great fight is going on, like, oh, wow, these guys are throwing bombs. Wow, this guy has so much heart. Whatever. If it's a shitty decision, wow, these judges suck. If Steve Mazzagatti fucks up, you know, Mazzagatti's an idiot. And if
he wants to justify a decision, Vegas,
it's like, oh, it's... that's why you never leave it in the hands of the judges. And finally, there's, you know, him fighting with random people on Twitter. It's like, you know, we're calling him homophobic slurs and whatnot. That's literally his Twitter feed.
If it's a shitty decision in Vegas, it's the judge's fault and they're fucking idiots and the commission sucks. If it's a shitty decision overseas, it's don't leave it in the hands of the judges. Because they fucking pick the judges.
Exactly. So that's Dana White's Twitter account, essentially. So there. You don't want 2 million followers, apparently, to read that shit. I just summed up everything you need to know.
I liked Seberg had a great tweet to me earlier today. Did you see Jon Jones buried Daniel Cormier for only having 20,000 Twitter followers?
Oh, no, I haven't seen that.
Oh, God. Somebody asked, you know, that UFC did this press tour for the fights later on this year, and somebody asked Jon Jones about Daniel Cormier. He's like, Daniel Cormier is irrelevant. He has no finishing ability, no cardio, some other bullshit. He's like, and he's only got 20,000 Twitter followers. So he's not relevant to me. And so I checked. Daniel Cormier has 57,000, and Alexander Gustafsson only has 30,000. So apparently Daniel Cormier is more relevant than Alexander Gustafsson. But I tweeted out that title shots will only be given based on Twitter followers. And T-Berg tweeted back at me, Dana White gets every title shot.
Oh, that is funny.
Oh, yeah.
Generally, yeah.
Twitter followers.
I mean,
Twitter follower trash talk might be the worst trash talk in the world.
It is the lamest argument you could ever advance. Like, wow. It's, to me, like, if I'm a fighter, hypothetically, it's always like, oh, dude, you only have, like, 300 followers. I'd be, oh, you're hitting me where it hurts, dude. Come on now. Just take it easy on my ego, my Twitter followers. Oh, God, that is so stupid. And this is actually, see, that's the thing. Like, when I say I hate MMA and everything about it, except the fights, this is part of it. Not, you know, fighters being stupid and burying each other for Twitter followers. That's obviously, you know, something. I mean, I don't hate that. I just find it stupid. But it's the MMA culture. The reason why one of the biggest stars in MMA and the best fighter in the sport, arguably, is stupid enough. Well, that's because he's just stupid. But the reason why he would make such an argument is because this is the UFC culture. For years, they've hyped up Twitter and encouraged fighters to be creative on Twitter, right? And make rape jokes.
Yeah, what happened
and
to
whatnot.
Twitter bonuses? Where did that go?
Yeah, well, that just went straight down the toilet once Miguel Torres made that rape joke. Because remember, that happened immediately afterwards, like the moment he made it. And then Rashad, and then Forrest Griffin on Twitter said rape is the new missionary or whatever. And yeah, so that's that. That immediately killed off that idea. That was sort of like Vince McMahon, you know, dying in a storyline. Then Chris Benoit just saying, no, sorry, hold that shit. So that's essentially what Miguel Torres did. So I'm not actually comparing the two, just to be clear. Which I did kind of.
Yeah,
but,
I was trying to let you move on, but
because I did compare, but yeah, that's not a very good analogy, and I apologize. But to like this whole Twitter thing, like why is this such a big deal? Like Twitter followers and whatever, and the UFC really, they seem to think it's legit. You know what I mean? Like the extent of your legitimacy as a fighter.
And that's the thing. Everybody just wants to copy Dana White, and oh, Dana says it better fall in line with him. Remember, he was like, Cyborg's not relevant. She's only got like 45,000
yeah.
Twitter
followers. Stephen Bonner, he said it for real. He's like, apparently right before he fought Anderson Silva, before that fight was brought up, he told his agent, you know, I want one more fight and I retire. But, you know, I'll only fight somebody who has more Twitter followers than me. And he was serious about it. Like, seriously, this is your criterion? Like, more Twitter followers than you? Are you serious?
You know people can, like, pay for Twitter followers?
Yeah, like you said. It's retarded. I mean, it's really extremely stupid. And it is the MMA culture, and it's influenced by Dana White, the biggest figure in MMA, the most important, the most influential figure in MMA. Because, you know, remember, like, Brittany Palmer regained her job because Dana White suddenly one day on Twitter is like, you guys want to see Britney back? And then like three people said yes. I mean, more people said that. But after three people had said yes, Dana was like, all right, she's rehired. Remember? Like everybody was like, yeah. And Dana White had already retweeted that she was rehired like, you know, 100 tweets prior to that. So it's sort of like, really, is this like, is this, again, are these your stand? I mean, I know she's a ring girl, so it's not like you only have to be hot and be able to walk and carry a sign to get that job. But still, like, based on Twitter reception, essentially, really, like, you get random followers' approval on Twitter. Like, imagine somebody who's like, nah, I don't like the way she moves her hips while moving. She's not well coordinated, you know, when she's holding that sign. I'm not sure, actually. No. Like, dude, what did you expect?
I would do this if I'm a UFC fighter. I would pay. Well, I know they don't make a lot of money. Maybe you don't want to spend it on getting Twitter followers. But if I'm an undercard guy, you know, instead of, you know, skip a McDonald's meal or something and pay $10 for an extra 20,000 Twitter followers. I'd be like, look at my Twitter followers, dude. Get me up on that main card instead of Facebook.
And
I guarantee,
you know,
UFC doesn't like verify that all these Twitter followers are real. They probably just,
of course, they don't.
And they're like, and shit, that's a lot.
Yeah, and you know, like how things pick up steam in MMA just out of nothing. Like, you know, let's say if somebody comes up with a theory that George St. Pierre is afraid of Johnny Hendricks, for example, you know, it's gonna build some steam, right? It's just gonna everything. This is it gets picked up. So all you need is just like four different people saying, "Oh, this dude is a killer on the amateur circuit." Nobody would want to fight him. Just say nobody wants to fight him. This is your biggest, like, essentially it's the feather in your cap in MMA. Nobody wants to fight this guy. Like, this is how good he is. And some people start retweeting it. It picks up some steam. And you show, like, some amateur video of him killing some poor overmatched dude with, like, some exotic technique. And that's it. And he knocks out somebody very horrible on the Facebook card. And then he keeps just, you know, gathering further momentum, and next thing you know, he's the next Todd Duffy, and that's not good, believe
Aim
me.
High, folks.
So yeah, I mean, seriously, this is how overall unprofessional the sport is. And when I say unprofessional, I'm not talking about the UFC, even though, with regards to some particular issues, they're really unprofessional. But just in general, there are some aspects that are really hard to take seriously when it's that easy. I mean, yes. Really, yes.
They're on a sports network now, though.
I just, again, I really dislike everything else about the sport but the fight themselves. So, you know what else I, when I say the fight themselves, only when that horn sounds and they're actually standing in front of each other, engaging or not, I don't care. Until that horn sounds again, then that 3:30 to 1 minute period interval, I hate it because it usually consists of horrible cornering, and then I start loving it again in the next 5 minutes, and then I'd hate it again.
That's a good one.
Then start loving it right until the announcement of the decision, and this is where I hate it the most. Like, of all the things about this sport, including Dana White and MMA roasted, judging is what I hate the most.
Classic journalism.
That's my analysis of Lyoto Machida and Phil Davis. Go ahead. Sorry for cutting you off for the umpteenth.
Classic journalism. Lyoto, you clearly won the fight. Anyone who doesn't think so doesn't know anything about MMA. That's good journalism.
This is how that was said in the press conference?
Yeah.
But it was more likely a Brazilian dude, let's be honest.
Probably.
Yeah. So, yeah, because there are standards for journalism which aren't that high in the world right now. And then there are standards for American journalism. Sorry, but it's true. There are standards for MMA journalism, which you think are the worst, but there's even a worse criteria, which is standards for Brazilian MMA journalism. Now, this is the worst. Now, take everything you know about MMA journalism, all the atrocities you read on a daily basis, multiplied by like three, put some random-ass Brazilian dudes in the rankings, and the official rankings, by the way,
and you
get Brazilian journalism. That's Brazilian journalism for you. Brazilian journalism is, Lyoto, you clearly won that fight, which is true. Everybody who doesn't think so knows nothing about MMA, which is also true, but that's not journalism. Sorry.
Come on. Now, fighters thought that Phil Davis won. Kenny Florian thought it was a great strategy.
That's what,
Daniel,
you know,
Cormier.
What? You know why I retweeted those? Not to sound like, oh, I know better than Daniel Cormier. I know better than Kenny Florian. I mean, I only have 300 followers.
That's what I said. You don't really have as much Twitter followers.
Exactly. So clearly they know more about MMA than I do. No, but seriously, it's not to enter. It's not that they care, because they're probably like a shit ton of people replied to them anyway. So why would my reply stand out? The reason I retweeted it in a way that really shows is just to highlight the stupid idea of, you know, oh, MMA judges, MMA fighters would make better judges. Like, you know, remember when Ricardo Almeida retired and turned into a judge and everybody acted like all our problems are suddenly coming to an end? Salvation for the MMA world, finally, the second coming of the Christ. Everybody acted like, oh, you know, that's the step in the right direction. Ricardo Almeida is now a judge. Like, dude, Randy Couture thought Kenny Florian was beating BJ Penn until he got choked out. So that's really not always the standard.
MMA fighters would be shitty judges.
Yes, I think they would be as shitty as current MMA judges. I mean,
Daniel Cormier would score every fight for a wrestler like he did this with Phil Davis.
Yeah.
They would just all score the fight for guys that they know and the disciplines they like and all that bullshit.
Yeah, that's the thing. This is actually an important point, all joking aside. Like, MMA fighters are arguably more biased than just random MMA judges. I'm not saying, like, you know, Ricardo Almeida is going to be judging a fight for Frankie Edgar. I mean, if we know that's not going to happen. But, well, at least we would hope that's not going to happen.
That's what I say, that might happen.
Because especially after the Cesar Gracie dude judged a... Well, which fight was it? Diaz?
Gilbert Melendez fight.
Oh, Gilbert Melendez fight, right. But they're biased towards disciplines. They're biased towards philosophies. Because unlike actual MMA judges that judge these days and have no idea about MMA, these fighters actually know about MMA. That just doesn't mean that they'd be good judges. But what it means when they know about MMA, it means they have their own ideas about what works in the sport. They have their own very subjective ideas about, oh, you know, like wrestling's the best discipline for MMA. It's, you know, it's the best foundation. Or a jab should always be the foundation of your striking or whatever. Like, if Firas Zahabi were to become, hypothetically, if Firas Zahabi were to become a judge, I guarantee you, if you're jabbing, you're winning the fight. Now, probably in MMA where fighters have shitty defense, if you're jabbing, you're probably actually legitimately winning the fight. But even if you're not, for us as a hobby, we probably think that you do. Again,
Rashad Evans would have beaten O'Gara 10 to nothing.
Yeah, with that
jab
to the hand.
Yeah.
It's sort of like, I think at one point, O'Gara was like, no, talk to the hand. He's like, all right, I'll just gonna jab it to death. He took the whole talk to the hand thing to a whole liver. He's like, nope. I'm not going to talk. I'll do my talking in the octagon. I'm going to jab. Good God. But anyway, so the
maybe
thing
this
is
the new age of fighting. You need to learn. You need to study. Instead of studying your
exactly, you study the judges. Oh, I love this theory so much. I really love this theory. You do your homework by watching tape on the judges.
Yeah.
And at some point, if you're Joe Rogan, though, you would fight, get screwed, and then watch tape on the judges that just scored your fight. They'd be like,
I'm telling you, this is what Jose Aldo was doing before we found out he hurt his foot. He's like, that kicking bullshit didn't work for Machida. Two takedowns won Davis the fight. I'm not kicking. I'm just going to try for these takedowns. I'll
exactly.
win easily.
You go to MMA decisions. You know what? Like an MMA decision, maybe they can on MMADecisions.com, they can just like at the end of each judge's biography, they can just have like a very, very, very quick description, like prefers single legs. Just that. Prefers single legs. And that's it. And you know, Cecil Peoples, obviously.
We need stats like the UFC has. Like stats like 100% of the time. Three takedowns are scored, he will score the fight for you. Some shit like that.
That's shockingly less confusing than UFC stats. I mean, yeah, that's exactly what... Seriously, that's the way it's supposed to work. And your camp would dig that shit up and everything. And then you fight accordingly. And then in the post-fight interview, she's like, "No, sorry, I did more homework than my opponent. I really worked hard, watched a lot of tape. It's not my fault." So, yeah, that is the new age of fighting. That would make it. And then lazy fighters who just, you know, don't like tape studying, whatever, they suffer for it, even if you're the much superior fighter. It doesn't matter. But what happens if you get knocked out? What happens if your opponent doesn't leave it in the hands of the judges? Like, Dana, if Dana White were to become a judge, right, because he's biased towards his theory, every decision would be a draw. It's like, sorry, don't leave it in the hands of the judges. That's my philosophy. But letting it to the judges doesn't win fights. That's supposed to be, like, his letting it go to the judges doesn't finish fights. So, obviously, this is a true statement, actually. Let it go to the judges, fight isn't finished, and therefore, no decision, essentially. And remember when, like, we had a dude who was writing for 401mania.com and suggested that every title fight who goes to a decision should automatically be a draw. No, that's not what he said. He said a title should never change hands on a decision. That's what he said. His name was Pat Robinson or Chris Robinson. Either Pat Robinson or Chris Robinson. Something Robinson, something very generic, obviously. And this dude legitimately said that. He said that. So Randy Couture wouldn't have won the heavyweight title against Tim Sylvia. Tim Sylvia would be like, "No, so I fought smart. I survived. I won this fight. I'm going to wear that belt at the nightclub tonight, bitches."
That would make for the worst title fights ever.
Yeah, it's sort of like disqualifying yourself in professional wrestling or like a count out or whatever.
Yeah, more champions should do that in professional wrestling, by the way.
Imagine, like, right now you hear this cliche about fighters fighting not to lose. Like, imagine if that rule were implemented. Like, the champions would do nothing. Anderson Silva would just run around and just, like, laugh at you the whole time. Like, you'll never catch me. You know, like, the old-up Greased guy, the greased-up, hold on. Yeah, the greased-up deaf guy and family
guy. Yeah.
Yeah, greased-up deaf guy. He's like, "You'll never catch me. You'll never catch me. See y'all in the next title defense." And then he'll start running.
Awesome. Absolutely okay. Awesome.
So, moving on.
Oh my god, that was fantastic. I don't even know where we're going anymore.
The other machine against Phil Davis. I mean, whatever. Honestly, I don't want to analyze the fight itself. I'll say this for Phil Davis, even though that's pretty hard to recover from. He fought... Like, that's the thing. It was one of those, you remember, like, you know when you're expecting a fight to be just a complete washout, and it's
Rampage against John Jones.
Yeah, and it's slightly better than you're expecting it, and suddenly, like, oh, you know, he's doing much better than I. Like, I guarantee you, if Joe Rogan was commentating, he would give you the impression that Phil Davis might legitimately be winning the fight. That is my,
yeah,
you know,
on
honestly,
the feet.
On the feet. And it's because he's not getting killed by Machida the way we expected, so obviously that just means he's winning. And then Mike Goldberg would say, "You know, I wonder what do you score, Joe? Do you score all those clean strikes that Machida landed, or do you score the late takedowns?" And suddenly Joe Rogan, who usually would hate that suggestion just because it's, you know, it fits his bias or his, yeah, well, he would be like, "You know, yeah, that's an interesting question, Mike. I don't know, but dude, that fight wasn't close, let's be honest. It was competitive. It was mildly competitive. And there's a huge difference between close and competitive. And this is what people fail to get. Like, because a lot of people, I read, this is the most frequent thing I've read on Twitter. Actually, no, in fairness, the most frequent thing I read was that this is an awful decision. So I'll give them credit for that. But the other narrative is that, you know, if you score every round alone, which is the way you scored it, it's like every round was close. Like, granted, I thought Machida won all of them, but they were all close. So apparently that makes it okay. Like, how does that make sense? There were three rounds, you thought Machida won all of them, but because somehow they were close, that makes it okay. No, it doesn't make it okay. That was a 30-27 decision for Lyoto Machida, which means he won every single round. And somehow he loses the fight. Now that makes zero sense. And no, the second round was close. I might entertain that idea. First and third rounds were not close at all. They were mildly competitive. What did Phil Davis do in that first round? He secured a takedown with 20 seconds remaining. After Machida...
in reverse.
No, if you scored in reverse, Machida would have won that round. See?
Yeah, exactly.
Because Phil Davis would have gotten that takedown early, and then Machida would have done. See, you should score fights in reverse. Yeah, I mean, I came up with that idea a year ago.
I know. I was lending credence to your idea.
Thank you. Scoring fights in reverse. That is my credit. See, if I'm a judge and fighters do their homework, they'd be like, I'm not going to do anything. No, I'm only going to do everything first. And then in the last minute, it's like, I'm not doing anything now.
Yeah,
I'll just regain my
takedown in the first minute, and then, you know,
yeah,
that's it.
So honestly, it was the reason I was talking earlier, like the first time I was enraged in a while, because honestly, as I said, like there are a lot of things about this sport I don't like anymore, to the point where it kind of really just drains your passion about some things. I'm not being a bitter old man or anything. I'm fine with not being as emotionally involved. In fact, in many ways, it's much better. Like the enraging decisions in fights and the enraging decisions taken by companies such as Bellator and Dana White and others don't just affect you as much. You laugh it off and move on. So it's really the best attitude to have, in my opinion, so you can just enjoy the fight. But for the first time in a while, I was enraged about a decision, because it sucks to see fighters ripped off for fighting the smart way and outclassing their opponents. I'm not saying, by the way, like, because I read, like, on Twitter, Tomas Rios was like, oh, Machida gave the world a beautiful fight. No, hold on. No. Okay, let's not be that biased. It wasn't an especially great performance by Machida. It really wasn't.
Didn't throw enough karate kicks.
And at times, he was actually looking at he was actually looking a touch sloppier than usual. Not sloppier. Yeah, I mean, he's usually never sloppy. So I'm not saying he was sloppy, but he was a touch less refined. Maybe that's a better way of putting it. So it wasn't a great performance by Machida or anything, but he did his thing, you know? I mean, he outstruck him.
Machida was Machida, as Daniel Cormier would say.
I mean, he was definitely, like, the point about, like, octagon control and being, like, the ring general. He was the ring general in that fight. The fight was fighting and it would have been fought at his own pace. And you know what? He's actually a tad more aggressive than usual. I don't know if you noticed that. But and obviously, it's not aggressive. But by his standards, he wasn't sitting back and relaxing and letting Davis come to him as much. It was sort of like he took the center of the octagon a bit more as opposed to just dancing around, which was smart because he wouldn't want to let Davis get the opportunity to clinch up with him against the fence. So in order to avoid that, he constantly took the center of the octagon. If you watch like all of Machida's fights and compare it to this one, this was probably more than any other fight in his UFC career where the fight is taking place in the center of the cage as opposed to Machida just circling a lot. Now, obviously, there was a lot of circling, but a lot of times it was done on Phil Davis's behalf. It was Machida who was actually not stalking him, but trying to cut off the angles and just Davis circling to Machida's right every single time, which is why I thought it was weird that Machida wasn't switching stances, because usually he does that a lot. And not only does that mess up your opponent's angles as far as driving for the single goes, or even the double, but it really forces him to change his exits or pay for them. The problem for Machida is that he couldn't get his left cross going because Davis was just circling away from it all the time. And Machida has a hell of a right cross. So if he would actually switch stances and just start scouting Davis and just cut off the angle immediately, which he does better than anybody in MMA, period. That's one thing. There's a fault in Machida's performance. It's that. Because usually what he does as you're circling out, he cuts you off with his lead leg and counter with his essentially his whatever happens to be his rear hand in that moment. So he wasn't doing much of that at all. That's the one really notable adjustment that he failed to do. But outside of that, for the most part, I mean, he got taken down twice, but for the most part, he was fighting at his distance. Davis really, even though, I mean, he should have been a bit more urgent in the first round and going for the takedown, but after that, I mean, you're not just going to bull rush Machida and try to go for a takedown. So I do understand that part.
But he tried that. He failed. He went for 10 takedowns in this fight.
Yeah, and he nailed only two, and they were sufficient to win. Seriously, that's the only thing he's done in this fight. Two takedowns. That's how he won it. Think about that. And
two takedowns
for
40 seconds of control.
Yeah, that's exactly the point. Like, and the second round was for like 15 seconds, by the way. Not even 40. There wasn't 40 seconds. That's the point. Like, two takedowns can be enough to win you a fight if you secure them, like, early in the rounds and just... Sorry? Yeah, it was like 1 minute combined. That's honestly, I don't think they even lasted a minute combined. I don't think Mashiach spent a minute on his back in this fight. It was probably more like 40 seconds combined.
That's what I said.
So 40, yeah, 40 seconds on your back. I mean, that's, and you lose the fight. Think about that.
Yeah.
It's, which is why I think it's an atrocious decision. Like saying, oh, the rounds were close and whatever. It's nonsense. Because essentially you had a fighter. Okay, he threw a bunch of awful-looking body kicks that landed, which is fine. But ate way more, but whatever. And got a combined 40 seconds worth of top control, which to his credit, at least he landed some shots. Like, let's be clear about this. I don't want to make it sound... Yeah. But I don't want to make it sound like Phil Davis stood there. No, he landed a couple of elbows late. Like, but seriously, he literally did them in the dying seconds each round. In the first round, he landed like, or threw. I don't even know how cleanly they landed, but he threw.
He landed six strikes on the ground the whole fight.
Okay, that's according to Fight Metric, which I trust. Okay, so six strikes on the ground. Seriously, think about that. And three of them were like those knees to the body that he did late in that second round, which, I mean, they were okay. But seriously, think about that stat for a second. Six strikes on the ground the whole fight. And you can go like, oh, but he landed, of course he landed more than that because on the feet. Yeah, but on the feet he was outstruck. So that argument is kind of negated. And he was outstruck handily. And not just by statistics.
Sorry,
it doesn't
I didn't
matter.
Give Phil Davis enough credit. He landed 12 strikes.
Ah, see, that's double the amount.
Yeah.
That makes it... The decision
six
of
strikes
hey,
round. Well, six strikes in the first, six in the second.
Yeah, no, I get what you mean. In each takedown.
That's total.
So, yeah.
According to them, the significant strikes is only five.
Yeah, and they were mainly those knees that he landed, like towards the end of the second round, which was the only round that I could even begin to entertain an argument saying that Phil Davis won.
Nope.
There's no way in hell. So, I mean, the most significant strikes of that first round was that Machida flurry, which, in fairness, on replay, it was sort of like that John Jones flurry. Like, only the first punch landed. It was exactly like that flurry he landed on John Jones, remember? Because when he just burst forward and landed that first punch and then everything else missed.
Yeah.
So in that fight, what happened was the body kick landed, the follow-up right cross landed, but then everything else missed. In that flurry. But I guarantee you, the judges didn't see it that way because the judges didn't have instant replay. And in fairness, in real time, it looked like it landed. Everything looked like it landed. He landed a body kick. That's one thing I actually love about Machida, just quickly, is to spray away from the judging bullshit for a second. He follows up, he starts a combination with a body kick. That is very unusual because as a fighter, you're conditioned, as an opponent, you're conditioned to resetting after a body kick because usually a body kick either ends a combination or it's just thrown in an isolated manner. You just throw the body kick and that's it. Machida starts his combo with a body kick or he notices maybe that you're lowering your guard and immediately has a reflex to follow it, which is really great. Essentially, he's opening you up with it and just setting up the rest of his offense. This is why Machida is... I always mention about how talented he is and how ahead of the curve he is. And so I really think this guy's record doesn't do him justice because he's really only lost to two people, which are Shogun and John Jones. And you can, I mean, realistically, it should have been, I don't want to say it should have been two losses to Shogun because if he would have lost that first fight, I don't think he would have gotten a rematch. So there wouldn't have been two losses, but whatever. But anyway, the two guys that have ever beaten him were Shogun and John Jones. And in his career, the fights I generally thought he lost were three. John Jones and Shogun finished him each, and the first fight to Shogun. He definitely beat Rampage Jackson, and he sure as shit beat Phil Davis today. Ugh, tonight.
On the bright side for Lyoto Machida, he can drop to 185 and get a title shot.
I think Lyoto Machida is unable to beat black fighters. John Jones, Phil Davis, Rampage Jackson. There you go.
Well, Chris Weidman's the champion at 185, so... That's the rumor I hear.
I think he'd beat Chris Weidman, by the way.
He would, too. No, Chris Weidman would get...
Would get a takedown, right. That's true. Actually, three takedowns to earn the decision. It's a five-rounder.
Exactly. That's why I said three.
Oh, you said three. Sorry.
Okay. Thanks for listening.
It's 9 a.m. Haven't had a minute of sleep. Shut up.
Cesar Freire beat Thiago Santos. Did you know this Cesar guy is Vitor Belfort's protege?
Only because Mike Goldberg mentioned it 1,200 times.
He's Vitor Belfort's protege. Vitor, I like how he fucked up. He fucks up a lot. But...
So is he a baby dinosaur? Would that make him a baby dinosaur? An even younger lion? No, sorry, no. Vitor Belfort is a baby dinosaur. He's an old lion. So he's a lion cub, essentially. He should be nicknamed Simba.
One of Goldberg's fuck-ups was during the Phil Davis fight. And he was like, Phil Davis does something or another at heavyweight, lightweight history. Or maybe it was lightweight, heavyweight.
He reversed the name. What was supposed to be light heavyweight?
Yeah.
Is that heavyweight, lightweight history?
I think it was lightweight, heavyweight history.
Oh, so okay. That's awesome. So in two divisions, lightweight and heavyweight. Phil Davis is putting GSP on blast, by the way, because he can move in up and down and weight like nothing, heavyweight and lightweight. And GSP wants to take like 3 years to put the muscle the right way. Get the fuck out of here.
The good fuck up in this fight was he was talking about, you know, Belfort's been mentoring this guy. He's like, and he's been mentoring him for over a century now. Like, really? Has he really? This dude was being mentored by Vitor Belfort when he was 18? I doubt that.
But will he fight for the TRT championship, though? Did you catch that awful joke?
Yeah, I did.
Seriously. MMA roasted. Chael Sonnen will fight Vitor Belfort for the TRT championship. Like, seriously, is that funny? Like, if I make that joke on the podcast, would you actually laugh? And you're very generous with your laughs. We basically laugh at everything the other person says. Would you laugh?
I'd probably give you a sympathy chuckle.
Yeah, but on Twitter, that's not where you give sympathy chuckles. That's where you burn people. Yeah. So, I mean, God, this dude is my new most hated thing in MMA. Honestly, by far. Like, if you watched, like, the other day, just to get to piss myself off for some reason, I don't know. I have, I guess, masochistic tendencies. I don't, by the way, but for some reason. I watched his, like, you know, he has these previews on YouTube.
I don't watch those. I know he's a stand-up comedian.
And oh, dude, I watched 6 minutes of his stand-up comedy act way before his MMA shtick.
Yeah, I watched, this was during, like, when MMA Roasted was just taking off, and he was on some stand-up thing, and so I watched...
Can we call him Adam Hunter, because that's his name? I don't want to call him MMA Roasted bullshit. No.
Well, yeah. I didn't know his fucking name.
Yeah, okay.
I'm saying this was before MMA Roasted, like, when it first started. Anyway, he was doing some stand-up, and... I watched it, and I was like, this guy's not funny.
Dude, apparently, like, I saw on YouTube, like, a video, for a suggested video, because I watched, like, his UFC 1 whatever preview, which is just jokes, you know? Like, with awful delivery and hand gestures. Like, as he's making the jokes, his hand gestures are like he's rapping. You know what I mean? Like, he's rapping. Seriously, just watch it, and you know what I mean? They're awful.
I'm not watching this shit.
It's just like when... Like, honestly, no. You know why I watch? Because, it's like, every video is, like, 90 seconds long. No, sometimes it's more. Sometimes they can be up to 3 minutes long. And I genuinely, I want to have, like, a ratio of laugh or not laugh. And I generally watch, like, 4 videos with 0 laughs. I'm not even joking. There was a couple that drew a smile or chuckle, whatever. But I watched, like, he had this video way before the whole MMA bullshit. He was, like, on Showtime or something. There was, like, 6 minutes worth of stand-up comedy. And that dude really needs to work on his delivery because they're awful. But, like, even the material were, like, good God. It was something about going to get tested for AIDS and running into his ex or whatever. And, Jesus Christ. It was, dude, no, it was painful. Like, it was painful. And then you see these morons in the crowd just laughing and clapping at the same time, you know, because they feel obliged to do that. Every time you watch a stand-up comedian, you clap when you laugh for some reason. Like, when you make a joke on the podcast and I laugh, you don't see me going like a moron because that's
I demand you to applaud my jokes from now on.
No, I'm not. Like, Dude, I don't like it's so fake when people do that. And you know, like, it's like at the awards when the host always burns somebody in the crowd, a celebrity, and the celebrity feels obliged to laugh because you want to sound like a good sport, right? You want to make it seem like you're a good sport. And so you always clap and applaud like a moron. Like, I'm sorry, that song. Sorry?
Unless you're Tommy Lee Jones.
Oh, why? Was he ever like.
He just gave like a stare of death.
that's the only stare he has. Like, dude, if I make a joke at Tommy Jones' expense in an alternate universe where I could be in his presence, I would want him to react that way first.
It was awesome. It turned into like this big meme and everything. It was fantastic.
I can imagine that. I just want to YouTube it. Do you remember who was the host so I can YouTube it?
I feel like it was at the Oscars.
Okay.
So just...
Was it recent?
Yeah, it was this year. This year's
Oscars. Oh, okay. Yeah. All right, I'll check it out. So it was Seth MacFarlane, you mean?
Yeah, I'm shocked you didn't watch that.
No, by the way, I don't find Seth MacFarlane funny. I find Family Guy very funny. If that makes any sense. Like, when he's in interviews and whatever, like, I'm not saying he's not funny, obviously. But I mean, sometimes it feels like he tries too hard, but I find Family Guy hilarious. Like, when he's in Family Guy, he's a genius. But in interviews and whatever, I don't think he's... When I say I don't find him funny, I don't mean he's MMA roasted, let's be clear. I just don't think he's hysterical. So that's why I didn't watch the Oscars.
All right, fair enough. I didn't really... I watched the Oscars, of course, to see if Jennifer Lawrence won. Otherwise, I didn't. But
of course, she was going to win.
I didn't know that. She was Jennifer against Meryl Lawrence, Streep.
Jennifer Lawrence, even though I don't really like her and I hated The Hunger Games, but Jennifer Lawrence does a better stand-up act than Adam Hunter. See that I saw a video.
Yeah, she's awesome.
Right after the awards, where like she was getting questions, and she starts like throwing these one-liners. She actually made me laugh.
She's awesome. That's why.
Like, of course, you would think that you're in love with her, but. Even us normal people thought, you know, that girl's kind of funny. When is the next Hunger Game?
I don't know, probably next year.
Oh, so not this year.
No, because she filmed some other movie with the same director who did Silver Linings, and then she did the X-Men movie as well. I think they've started shooting it, but she's also been filming like a bunch of other shit. Not that I stalk her.
Yeah, no, you don't.
I realized when I was talking how bad that came off. I was like, yeah, I just
yeah.
Did her whole shooting schedule.
The thing is, yeah, because when you started answering, he was like, wow, he took that question way too seriously. You could just say next year and move on. No, like, you gave me her schedule. It's like,
well,
okay.
Cool. I was making sure you were informed is all.
Is she in her trailer right now while filming The Hunger Games? Getting like makeup and dirt
know.
All over her face as Katniss Everdeen?
I just texted my source, so I'm waiting to hear back from him.
All right.
Yeah, this Frere guy beat Thiago Santos with an arm and guillotine because he lifted up instead of pulling back.
Yes, exactly. He you have to lean forward, right? Not push backwards.
Yeah.
Exactly. But unfortunately, it was the one time it worked, Joe Rogan wasn't there. So, how's that?
Yeah, Zonka made that joke on Twitter. He's like, it worked because Joe Rogan wasn't there to scream, it's tight, it's deep, it's over.
He wouldn't say it's deep. It's an arm and guillotine. It never works.
It's tight, whatever.
No, but Joe Rogan makes a thing like, oh, it's an arm and guillotine. I don't know if he's able to finish it. He's not Marcelo Garcia. And, you know, that's the most difficult technique in MMA. Actually, I touched on that the other day where he makes it sound like it's the holy grail of MMA grappling. I'll say this. What do I always enjoy in MMA? You know where I'm going with this, right? About
guys
this finish.
Hurt their opponents and
exactly.
Submission.
There you go. He hurt his opponent on the feet, finish it with a submission. So he's A-okay in my book.
Sure. That's the only three fights you watched.
Yeah. That's the only three. Oh, okay. Well, yeah, that's for sure. The truth of the matter is, since, you know, with the time difference and all, and
the fact that this card sucked besides the top two fights.
Yeah, and I was sleepy as fuck. And again, I had spent the whole day on the beach. Diving in the Mediterranean.
So bad for you.
Yeah, I know. Dude, you should. About having to watch this card. I mean,
I had to watch it too. And you know where I spent my day? At work and then the hospital.
For those who don't know, Jeremy wasn't actually the patient.
Yeah.
Yeah.
but it still sucks having to go there and listen.
No. Just I'm reassuring our audience that you're okay because they all tremendously care.
I'm sure.
So
they're all very worried about me that I'm doing this podcast still. So they're probably like, "Oh, he's fine. Fuck."
Yeah, with the exception, I mean, he says something had happened to his head, then maybe because you know he just suddenly knows Jennifer Lawrence's schedule. Except it's not suddenly, and you know that every day. I wonder if some of our listeners truly don't understand that still about you, like your Taylor Swift obsessions and like your Jennifer Lawrence nonsense, like how serious you are about these things.
It's not an act.
Yeah, like that. I generally wonder if they get it that it's not an act.
I don't know.
Okay, but anyway,
I have no clue if they think it's an act or they don't know how serious I am.
So after a whole day, and when I mean a whole day, it's a whole day. Like I went back at 10 p.m. again, time difference and everything.
Yeah, tell us more about your day at the beach, Sammer.
No, that's not. I don't want to say more. But it was a lovely, lovely day at the beach. I'll say this. I got drunk right before I dove, which is a no-no, really. But I did it anyway. Yeah, I'm a daredevil.
Rebel.
I'm saying I'm a daredevil. I just said the same thing. Mic bump. I wonder if Mike Goldberg was like Mike bump Brian Stan, and Brian Stan would suddenly turn into this mean guy and get, like a death stare of doom. Yeah. Probably just like, what the fuck are you doing? Brian said he's like, sorry, cut.
God.
Where's my M16 at? And he calls like his contacts from Iraq and he's like, all right, I want this dude dead. I want him dead. Or he calls this whole unit that he saves like, okay, you guys owe me, right? You know that, right? You remember when I saved your lives in Iraq? Yeah. Okay, there's this dude. Just take care of it. Oh, dude.
If Mike Goldberg happens to die tonight, we know who the suspect number one is.
Or maybe Rory McDonald hears this, and him being the perfect serial killer just gets rid of him, and it gets blamed on Brian Stan. Think about that.
It'd be a good job by Rory McDonald.
Of course. Did he ever do anything that wasn't a good job? He's never lost. Ah, Carlos Condit, yeah. But that's the one that's haunting him, so that makes sense.
He'd be better.
Wait, weren't they supposed to fight and somebody got injured?
Yeah, McDonald got injured.
Oh, that would have been a great fight. Oh, that was on the GSP DS card, right?
Yeah,
true.
Yeah, but Hendrix Condit was still pretty awesome.
Yeah, oh, that's true. Yeah, it was replaced by another great fight, which set up Hendrix GSP, which is cool. No, okay, can't complain too much. But I still want to see Rory McDonald against Carlos Condit. Natural born killer against natural born killer. So, yeah, there you go. Oh, are we done? Yeah, that was it. So anyway, yeah, after my long day at the beach, I came home drunk, tired, and asleep. So I sleep and I set on my alarm deliberately to wake up midway through the show after enough fights have went on. My hope was to wake up right in time for Davis Machida, but I didn't want to risk it in case there were quick finishes. So I woke up for the fight right before that. So I missed everything else before that.
Yeah, the fact that they paced this card so fucking bad as well.
I mean, I wouldn't know.
You obviously didn't watch the whole main card, yeah. But God, this was terribly paced.
What happened?
Oh, they just had the first fight, and then they're like, oh, let's throw some prelims. Oh, let's show Machida and Aldo and all these guys backstage 300 times. And then let's show some stupid video packages. It wasn't fight after fight. I think from 8 o'clock to 11:30, which, you know, that's 3.5 hours right there, there was 41 minutes of action in those 3.5 hours.
Oh.
And that was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, about 7 fights. And we got 41 minutes.
Sorry, not to cut you off, but according to Twitter, one judge, Chris Watts, scored round 3 of Machida versus Davis Fulfilled Davis.
Of course he did.
Seriously, round 3. Like, when I heard 29, 28, I thought, oh, so moronic. So he didn't even score. Because he scored a 29, 28, it wasn't even the takedown. Like, see, we've just been talking about, oh, takedown is all you need. Apparently, no, you don't even need that. You need to get your ass. He didn't get
his
ass.
No, you just need to try for the takedown.
That's yeah, and get out class in the process. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Octagon control be damned. You know, effective grappling be damned, because Machida defended all the takedowns, which is effective grappling, and I have to bring this up every time. He was the ring general, and he landed the better strikes. So that round had effective striking, because he landed better strikes, effective grappling, because he defended the takedown, and octagon control, because he really was dictating where the action takes place and how it takes place. That's octagon control is not really about where the action takes place. It's more about, you know, especially being the ring general, I always have to bring this up. So Machida met all those criteria. Met all that criteria. And actually, even aggression, because as I said, Machida was more aggressive than usual. He was the one initiating.
Takedowns show aggression.
Takedown attempts show aggression,
yeah,
apparently.
That's what I mean.
Yeah. Apparently, no, you know what? All you need is intent. That's a new criterion. That's intent. You know, you want to take him down. That should be the new, seriously, intent. And you win the fight. Get the fuck out. I mean, that wouldn't have changed much. You would have won a split decision anyway. But at least, oh God. I mean, I'm pissed. Let's move on.
My theory, I didn't get to float this one out there because we've hit on like 8 million tangents on this podcast.
Do you really want to just talk about the card without hitting on tangents?
Well, no.
Because that would have been fun.
No, I'm just saying. My theory is that every judge is like, oh, I'll give Phil Davis the sympathy 29-28 just to make it look like, you know, we're not completely biased towards the Brazilian. No other judge will be stupid enough to do this. And then they all did it. And that's how
Phil Davis won. Maybe this should finally put a dent in the hometown bias theory. That's one of my worst narratives in MMA, like my least favorite narratives in MMA. Like, oh, yeah, of course they would score it for the hometown guy. Like, even like most of the times the judges don't even know who these guys are. I mean, in this case, they do. But I mean, honestly, I don't want to talk like, oh, I have sources or whatever. No, not really. But like a very notable MMA journalist told me, and somebody I actually like and respect, he's like, you'd be shocked. That, what's that?
I said that narrows it down.
Yeah, that really narrows it down. It's like, you know, for the Diego Sanchez-Martin Kampmann fight, two of the judges did not know who Diego Sanchez was.
Awesome.
Seriously. That's something. Now, again, that's something somebody told me, so it could be completely untrue. I don't want to be like those. I'm not a journalist, but I don't want to be like those stupid journalists. Oh, I heard from somebody, heard from somebody, heard from
fake
somebody.
Yeah.
I'm a phony insider. That's what I am. But all I'm saying, and I'm saying it, maybe it's not true, but I usually trust this dude, and he's usually right. All I'm saying is that I really heard that two of the judges did not know who Diego Sanchez was. Seriously. So, essentially what I'm trying to say is that judges don't really care about who wins. There's no bias. There's just stupidity.
Yes.
Most of the time. I'm sure there are exceptions, but most of the time.
Talos Leites beat Tom Watson. Talos Leites is back.
Yeah. Actually, with a similar gas tank, though.
What?
Apparently. From what I hear, he's back with a similar gas tank. It still sucks.
Well, I mean, his third round, he looked good. He wasn't completely gassed out. He actually didn't look too bad. His striking looked much improved, which I guess if it sucks, it can only go up. No, his takedowns looked good. I didn't think he looked terrible. He's not getting a title shot at middleweight, but I think he can.
I love how I don't think he looked terrible. It's a compliment for Talos Leites.
Yeah, well, the standards are low for Talos Leites, if you haven't noticed. Honestly, he may have had the best performance on the main card.
Nope, that was Phil Davis. He beat Lyoto Machida, biggest win of his career.
John Lineker beat Jose Maria. Anyone named Jose Maria should lose. Anyone with an orange mohawk should lose. Anyone who looks like Tito Ortiz should lose. Jose Maria hits all three criteria. Anybody?
Well, then, there you go.
But John Lineker missed weight, so sucks to be him. Like 4 pounds, fat ass. Anthony Perosh knocked out Vinny Magalhaes. 14 seconds. This is awesome. Only because Mike Goldberg remixed his catchphrase.
What did he say?
Oh my God! So Perosh knocks down Magalhaes, and you know he looks pretty out of it there. And then Perosh hits him with a couple of shots, and it looks like the ref's gonna step in. And Mike Goldberg's like, "It is all over."
Oh wow! He got ahead of himself, and then
yeah, he remixed that shit. It was
again,
fantastic.
This shows how forced it is. Like, that's the problem with a catchphrase. That's the problem with a catchphrase. Even look at like what is how to okay. Seems like I'm bringing in professional wrestling a lot. Professional wrestling is something known for catchphrases, right? And like, it's almost like if you hear a Rock promo, you almost always know how it's going to end. Like, whether forced or not. And at some awesome. Point, it's still what?
Still awesome.
No, well, yeah, because it's The Rock, not Mike fucking Goldberg.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's actually a good catchphrase that's popular, not, you know, it is all over. Like, seriously, oh, way to get creative, Mike Goldberg. It is all over.
Dude,
all
this
right.
remix was sweet, though.
Maybe that should
remix
be a
it
new
more
thing.
Often. I know you're not a big battle rap fan, as in you've probably never seen one in your life outside of maybe you've watched 8 Mile, but
I watched 8 Mile.
Yeah, well, exactly. That's what I said.
Maybe. I used to be an Eminem fan. I mean, I'll admit, actually, this nobody knows about this, but the other day, late at night, I actually caught on YouTube and heard what's it? I've completely forgot the song. Oh my god! Like I forgot the name. That makes me a big fan. But Lose Yourself. That's what I'm trying to remember and enjoyed it. Like
Antonio
finally,
Silva's
like, oh.
walkout theme against Fedor.
Well, see that song. I actually now I'll say this among all. Like, I'm not a hip hop fan or anything, but I do think Eminem is supremely talented. Seriously. I think as a lyricist, he's amazing. And I think he's pretty much the only hip-hop artist whose songs I occasionally enjoy these days.
All right, well, you know I'm...
And I'm a metalhead, so keep in mind. Like, I basically mostly listen to 80s metal. So that's coming from me, that's a compliment.
All right, well, you know I'm big on Eminem.
I know. So, I was trying to gain your approval by saying that. I wanted you to like me, that's all.
That's good. Well, that's why I like my girlfriend, because she knows the entire Marshall Mathers LP, which...
Oh, I know the entire Marshall Mathers LP. The Way I Am is my favorite Eminem song.
All right, well, there you go.
I used to listen to that shit, now, because I was young when that first came out, so, you know,
well,
everybody...
I can date you then, Sammer.
Okay, I don't know what to make of that. I guess I should be flattered, but okay, thanks, I guess.
Anyway, as I was talking about battle rap, if you noticed, battle rap is cooler than MMA. You should get into it. It's much better.
Dude, at this point, anything's cooler than MMA. Unless, like, hold on. With battle raps, there are judges, though. Like, sir, there is room for shitty
decisions. Not in most of the big battles. You judge it for yourself, and then you go on forums and argue with people.
Oh, okay.
Which is much more fun than actual stupid judging.
Cool. Fair enough.
I'm getting big into it. Battlefix.com. Everybody check that shit out. I've been doing some freelance work for them. Got a bunch of interviews with battle rappers. Anyway, there's this guy who remixes bars, and that's what Mike Goldberg sounds like. Hitman Holla. Mike Goldberg.
Dude, you just buried Hitman Holla. I'm just yeah. letting you know. I don't know who this dude is, by the way, but you just buried him by comparing him to Mike Goldberg.
Yeah, he's actually one of the most viewed battle rappers in the United States. He's on a much bigger level than Mike Goldberg. But that's what it reminded me of when Mike Goldberg remixed it.
I love how you've been trying to get that one in for like half an hour now.
We've been trying to get half our shit in. I never let you get off on the Jose Aldo moving up shit.
Yeah, this podcast isn't flowing well at all today. But I mean, that's kind of how we want it to be most of the time.
Yeah. Amanda Nunes beat Sheila Gaff. You said you watched this because they showed it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, good performance.
Yeah, that's okay. I'm like, yeah, I watched it as though I'm gonna have an analysis. Good performance. Cool.
I mean, I didn't expect you. What do you want to analyze?
No, I'm serious. Yeah, that is my analysis. Good performance. Yeah.
Sheila Gaff, the first woman who's gonna be cut by the UFC, apparently.
Oh, now that there's an honor I can do without.
Oh, yeah, by the way, Steve Cook tweeted me. He's like, I don't keep up with the women, but did this UFC have a lockdown on all the top 10 women's bantamweights or whatever? I was like, yeah, according to the UFC rankings, they have all the top 10 bantamweights.
But they don't, by the way, to be clear on this. But yeah.
According to the UFC rankings, they do.
Yeah, well, they're super official. In fact, see, such as the... That the influence of the UFC is so big that Georges St-Pierre became a women's MMA fan.
Yeah, exactly.
You caught that? He even shared a hug with Ronda Rousey. I mean, that's... You didn't hear about that?
Fuck no, dude. I don't care.
Okay, there was this press conference thing that the UFC did. I don't know why they did it. It was on the same night with
the World Tour.
Okay, the World Tour. So there was... so the press conference was Dana White in the middle, and then, like, on a...
Yeah, I know about
right,
the press
conference. Velasquez, John Jones, GSP, and Ronda Rousey was just right next to GSP, which I was first like, oh, that's awkward because she's buried him in the past. And then Misha Tate and some other dudes were like sitting the other.
Challenging for the titles.
Yeah, JDS and all the rest. No, because no, the thing is, I know. Yeah, I'm not gonna try to remember like everything. Yeah, Alexander Gustafsson, Junior Dos Santos, and Johnny Hendricks. There, you're happy.
Yes.
Cool. Okay. So, by the way, I didn't really know that it was guys fighting for the titles. I only watched the part where they share a hug. I didn't really watch the press conference. I didn't know who was there. Now that you mentioned it, that seems to make sense. because I did wonder, like, okay, so, I mean, it seems arbitrary that they selected these guys. Like, I know Benson Henderson and, you know, is fighting, so he's not going to attend, and Demetrius Johnson's there. Where the fuck is Chris Weidman, though? I mean, I guess that's another... maybe him and Anderson would be too awkward to bring them along.
Well,
but anyway.
They had this press conference thing planned like months ago.
Oh, okay. Right. They probably planned for Anderson to be there. But,
by himself.
Probably like he'd have no challenger or something. And then Chris Weidman screwed those plans up. But anyway, Ronda Rousey was there sporting awesome glasses, just like the ones I occasionally wear. So cool. I only wear glasses when I'm watching TV, but. She has, like, those cool-ass glasses. So, Ronda, I don't like you, and you buried me on Twitter before, but awesome glasses. You go, girl. I can't pull that one off, I know, but still. And Ariel Helwani asked George St. Pierre, he's like, George, you know, in the past you said you're not a fan of women's MMA. I'm just wondering if your opinion has changed after that. And then they know what, you know, seeing it, so I was like, of course Ariel Helwani has to be a dick. Come on, Ariel. You've been sitting there for 30 minutes thinking, how am I going to stir shit? How am I going to turn into a dick? And Ariel, you know how he laughs? Like, he's happy with the attention he's getting, even though he's being called a dick. Like, the sexual tension between those two is unbearable, by the way. I'm just throwing it out there. Honestly, there is sexual tension between Dana White and Ariel Helwani. You know, like this girl that you know you like and you know she likes you, and you guys flirt like in secret, but you keep taking shots at each other in front of your friends, like jokingly, and try to come up with witty stuff. Calling somebody a dick is not so witty, but that's Dana White. For him, that's kind of witty. But anyway, so after all the sexual tension moments, George stutters even more so than he usually does when he speaks English. And he was like, I was uneducated fool. No, he didn't call himself a fool, but he said, I was uneducated. And the first time I was, he was Seaborg. He called her Seaborg. It's like Tito. He was like, I watched Seaborg beating up some poor girl. And my heart, I guess he meant like his heart sunk for her or whatever, but he meant like maybe like I'm kind-hearted and I felt bad watching for, he said like he felt bad watching for the girl getting her ass kicked. I'm guessing it's that Asian chick that that Kim Winslow let get killed by Cyborg. So that must have been the
fight. If you say Cyborg is killing some poor girl, that's any fucking fight in like the last 5 years.
I'm just gonna call her Seaborg from now on. I'm just making that one clear. It's like Seaborg, dude. If Seaborg ever wins the title, it's gonna be the best combination ever. But anyway,
Seaborg needs to be signed just so this can happen.
It's like remember when Lyoto Machida won the title? It's like the Drago is the champion.
Yeah.
It's really like Seaborg has won the title. And that should be her catchphrase, actually. So moving on. And he was like, after he watched Seaborg kill that girl, it's not actually, he was trying to say, like, there didn't seem to be actual skills, just like, you know, just like Seaborg beating us on some poor soul. But then after the UFC, and oh, his justification was like, I'm an MMA fighter, so in my free time, I don't like to watch MMA. Well, after you, George, I don't like watching MMA in my free time either. I just feel like I have to do it. So he's like, I don't really watch a lot of MMA, so I hadn't watched a lot of women's fight. But when they signed, you know, Ronda and everything, I was curious. And I watched her, and he was like, oh, you know, her opponent had a choke on her, and she escaped, and she had a beautiful jujigatami set up. Like, why don't you just call it an armbar? Like, okay, we know you're educated, George, and everything, but every single time he calls it jujigatami, like, seriously, okay, shut up. It's an armbar. They had a beautiful armbar set up and whatever. And Rhonda then feels the need to reciprocate, right? She doesn't play hard to get or anything. She's like, oh, you know, I'm glad George said that. And there was an interview in which I said, like, the day George St. Pierre admits he's a fan of MMA, I'll admit I'm a fan of his. And, you know, that shit with Nick is over. And, you know, he did a good job. He won the fight. And then they turn to each other and they share a hug.
Awesome.
And everybody just claps. And everybody on Twitter obviously made jokes that, you know, well, the obvious.
Awesome. Thanks for sharing.
That George St. Pierre is gay. No, sorry. That's not the obvious joke. Yeah, okay. Moving on.
The best is that out of that whole press conference.
That was more exciting than anything on this card, by the way. But yeah.
Now, the best thing out of this whole press conference is Cain Velasquez is scared to go to Brazil for fear of his safety.
Yeah, what the fuck? I read that headline, but it was like, I was pretty sure it's a misleading headline, so I didn't even want to know what the article said, so I didn't even click. Is Cain Velasquez serious?
Yeah.
Like, dude, how are you supposed to be a draw with the Latinos? Not these Latinos like, no, we don't want this pussy. Like, no, edit that out. That was racist. Edit that out.
This is the best podcast ever.
No,
you're,
I didn't
think
that out. That came off as way too stereotypical. Seriously, that out.
That was great. Fantastic. Keep going.
No, that's not like
this. I agree. They probably don't want this pussy representing it.
No, but seriously, like, you're supposed to be, like, this badass heavyweight champion, and you're catering to the Latino audience, even though you're not really Mexican, but whatever. You're Mexican-American. But, I mean, no, you're a Latino, and you're catering to the audience, which is cool. And they want to look up to you, and you're, like, this badass champion, and your idea is, like, I don't want to go to Brazil. I fear for my safety. Dude, come on now.
I told you, or I put it on Twitter, he should get that brown pride changed to Brazil pride. Then they'll accept him.
Plus, I mean, what the hell? This is stereotypical of Kane, actually. That's if I'm Brazilian, I'd be insulted by that. Like, dude, I mean, I'm sick of this, but I mean, I know it sounds ironic after I just did a horrible Hispanic impression, and I do apologize for that. It's a lack of sleep, but
what a fucking poor excuse.
I know, but I mean, usually whenever somebody says something even mildly racist and apologize, they're even less convincing than I was. But I generally, you know, I was
your
just,
mouth was hacked.
Ah, that's funny. There you go. That's my new thing. I'm gonna clap. Just gonna applaud every time you make me laugh. But anyway, so like seriously, the UFC. I'm not saying the UFC is responsible for Brazil's image. No, seriously. But what the hell is this? Like, oh, Chilt can't go because you know, if we are gonna go, we're gonna maximize security. Kane can't go for his safety. Like, no. Just go to Brazil. It's fine. People are not going to shoot you there.
Yeah, dude,
and he
that
didn't
Brazil,
do anything.
That Brazil crowd, they really were hard on Phil Davis. They just didn't do shit. They didn't cheer or boo or anything. They were just
yes.
Like, this is bullshit.
Seriously, that's it. Like, apparently on Twitter, somebody said that, and he was translated, and he was translating that they said, and I quote, referee, you can eat an asshole. That's what they said. Which is cool. If they were genuinely saying that, according to somebody, a Brazilian journalist on Twitter. I mean, it's cool. You at least they said referee, by the way, not judges. They said referee, you can eat an asshole. So maybe you know, they call him referee. I don't know. Maybe it's something that was lost in translation. Or maybe they just hated the referee for something. Maybe they thought the referee actually is the judge. But no one remember when somebody actually suggested that? And even Big John was like, no, we tried that one out. No, not going to work. They tested it out. Well, Big John was the ref and the judge.
Yeah, that sounds smart.
Seriously. But anyway, so like, I guess I could mildly understand it for Chael Sonnen, even though it was pretty damn stupid and borderline offensive then. But for Cain Velasquez, like, what did this dude do? I mean, he's super respectful and everything. He just won a fight. And he had already lost
out of two Brazilians in his last two fights. Well, his last three fights.
Actually, yeah. I mean, if I'm Bigfoot's family, I hate the fuck out of Cain Velasquez. But if I'm Junior Dos Santos, I mean, they split their meetings so far. It's cool. It's no big deal. Even though Junior Dos Santos said that Cain Velasquez hits like a girl. Did you catch that?
Wow, that's amazing trash talk.
Yeah, he said he is like a girl. Apparently, he then, like, Air Helwani tweeted. Air Helwani blocked me, by the way, so I wouldn't know. But somebody retweeted it, like, Junior Dos Santos clarifies it's like a girl comment. But I didn't click because, I don't know. I choose to believe that Cain Velasquez hits like a girl, even though he just brutalized. Yeah, pillow fist Cain Velasquez. Bigfoot Silva agrees. Like, yeah, he hits like a girl. A very, like, tough girl, but a girl. Like, what the fuck is this? Like, he hits like a girl. Yeah, he dropped me for the first time of my life with a single punch, but he hits like a girl. Like, seriously? I mean, come on now. You can do better than that. It's awful trash talk. And I mean, I like Junior Dos Santos, but everybody likes him because he's like this super nice guy, right? So, you know, and it seems like it's genuine. So why doesn't he keep it that way?
Because he's got to sell the fight, damn it.
Okay, so apparently maybe he's saying that so that Brazilians wouldn't fear for their safety from Cain Velasquez. He can be like, yeah. No, attack this dude. He hits like a girl. So you can just attack him. It's okay. Like, just having an image of Cain Velasquez because they call him the Terminator and everything, just walking down the streets of, like, Sao Paulo or something and just punching bitches left and right as they come at him. You know, like it's an episode of Lord of the Rings where, like, walking on these, like, really narrow, it's like this narrow bridge, and they're just throwing everybody left and right, and Cain is just punching people left and right, and they're just, like, falling. That's the visual I'm getting right now. That's Cain Velasquez punching like a girl.
They're going to be like the Hobbit when they're fucking, I don't know.
Yeah, that's actually what I meant, not the Lord of the Rings. Yeah, that was a scene out of, from the Hobbit, actually. Not
yeah,
Lord of
I got that reference.
But, wow. Kidding. Not only did you get it, but you corrected me. And I'm like the biggest Lord of the Rings fanboy you'll ever meet. Well, I'm impressed, Jeremy.
I had to watch that fucking movie. God, it was bad.
No, come on. I mean, I'll admit I was slightly disappointed, but not to the point where I'd go, God, it was bad. It wasn't that bad.
I fell asleep during it. Girlfriend had to wake me up.
I can understand. Like, if you're not a fan of that, if you've never watched Lord of the Rings, nor do you like it, so if you're not a fan of that, I can see why.
I just gotten off work, and so I wasn't really in the mood to watch these fuckers walk for 2 hours.
Walk for 2 hours. That's one way to put it. Now, you're really good at these. Remember, like, I told you this before. Like, you can make anything sound boring if you put it this
that's
way.
Why I said
like
that.
A bunch of guys kicking a ball, right? Or like, a bunch of fighters dry humping. That's you can make anything seem boring.
Although fans actually subscribe
to the bunch of fighters dry humping thing.
Have you seen Jay and Silent Bob? I guess this was Clerks 2, actually. You watch the Kevin Smith films?
I'm sorry, my 4-year-old nephew just woke up. So, yeah, that was a kiss.
Get him on the podcast. I want his thoughts on these fights.
Didn't watch.
What are his thoughts on judging in MMA? Does he score takedowns more importantly than striking?
No, I think because even a little child could tell you that a punch probably weighs more than dragging somebody
to
the floor.
Does he hit harder than Cain Velasquez?
Maybe you should try that. Yeah.
All right, so
sorry,
have
he's
you
out
seen
now.
Clerks too, I guess not.
No, yeah, that was my mind drifted off. I was saying hi to him when you said that. No, I haven't. Why?
Well, that's one of the, like, some Lord of the Rings fanboy is, like, in there, and then the clerk is, like, talking. He's like, they fucking walk, and they walk, and they walk, and then it should have ended when Frodo blows the guy or some shit like that. I haven't seen it in a while, but.
Blows the guy? What is this in reference to?
I don't know. Frodo apparently is getting ready to blow somebody.
I'm trying to remember what is no.
I guess in the third movie, the very
wait, end. Blow as in like suck dick.
Yeah.
Just to be clear on this, not blow him up.
Yeah.
Frodo was about to. I mean, he's annoying as hell. So
did he have some like emotional speech with somebody?
Oh yeah, well he had a shit. That's all he did in that stupid show. It's not a stupid film, but. For that stupid character, I should say. Like, just look miserable and then have emotional speech. Yeah, I mean, maybe that's what he meant because Frodo, like, starts just crying on Sam. And, yeah, I guess that's what he's referring to. I don't know why that would equate to a blowjob, though. I mean, that's supposed to be something good. Not sucking dick, though. But, yeah. So, I don't know. I mean, from my experience, blowjobs are not nearly as tedious as Frodo's speech. Even with teeth.
He does the whole thing and he's describing the trilogy. He's like, here's the first movie. And he walks and he stares blankly. You have to watch the YouTube clip. I'll send it to you.
Okay, fair enough.
I'll do that. I'll send it to you on Twitter. We still have like half this card to talk about, even though we haven't.
No, we just had like the Facebook fights, which we never talk about, so we're done.
We still have the prelims, the FX fights.
All right, fine. We never talk about those either. You're gonna ask me, have you watched them? In case,
no,
in this
I
case,
know you
no,
haven't
I have.
Watched them.
So just say, you know, XX fighter look good, beat him up.
Yeah, I gotta do my usual shtick on the prelims here.
Yeah, but that takes
stuff.
About 5 minutes, so it's cool.
I know, but shit, that might be another 100 tangents the way we've gone tonight.
Yeah, that's true.
Sergio Moraes beat Neil Magny, submitted him. I like the one tweet. It was like, oh, a black belt. Jiu-Jitsu ace submits some lanky guy nobody's ever heard of. That's shocking. Ian McCall beat Liarte Santos. Ian McCall won a fight. He's the number 3 ranked flyweight, even though this was his first UFC win. Ranking.
There was his first win since 2011. Summer 2011, actually. So, yeah, 2 years. Third best flyweight. Flight heavyweight. Flight heavyweight should be a weight class.
Light heavyweight flyweight. McCall looked fine, but I don't know. His wife still cheated on him with Rob Emerson.
Yeah. Rob Emerson, the same guy who beat a retard. You know, remember? I don't know if it was like a mentally handicapped person or like a handicapped person. I don't know. But heard about that? He and his gang apparently beat some kid silly. I think he was actually physically handicapped. It was really a horrifying story to read. It was like, I mean, so this dude is a piece of shit, basically, Rob Emerson. Not for sleeping with Ian McCall's wife, though, for beating a handicapped kid.
Honey, Yaya beat Josh Klopp and took him down. And that was about it. And out-positioned him. Francimar Barrasso beat Arnaldo Oliveira. They show the third round of this fight after the end of the FX prelims. And this was just, you know, great, fantastic UFC. They're like, let's recap the first two rounds. So they show a little highlight. And then we're going to watch the third round in the entirety. So this was real smart because the third round absolutely sucked. And then the crowd booed. And that's supposed to sway you to buy the pay-per-view. And there was no Joe and Dana yelling. So it was just no extra buys were on for this one.
Oh, by the way, speaking of tangents. What the hell is Clucky? Is there like a joke I'm not getting there about judging? Like, oh, Clucky strikes again or whatever?
It's something Radulich does. I don't really get it either. It's a chicken, a fucked up chicken who can't judge fights apparently.
Okay, well, because I'm checking after the Machida Davis decision, I was like, hold on, I want to check Mark Radulich and how he scored it. And I was prepared to be pissed at Mark. He had scored it any other way, but thank God he had every round for Machida. So, you know, props to Mark. Actually, I've been agreeing more and more with his scorecards recently. But anyway, not to sound condescending, but that was genuine props. I read, like, Jeffrey Harris in the comments saying, after Machida Shogun, I honestly don't feel too bad about Klucky striking at Machida again. And I'm like, could this line of thinking be any more awful?
Read Radulich's UFC on Fox report. And he has, like, a gif of Klucky, like, there or something.
I think I've seen it actually.
Yeah.
So that's what it is. So it's a 411 mania thing, kind of like an inside joke.
I guess. I'm not in on it though.
No, because even like the comments like no Klucky yet or whatever. So yeah, I think they're just expected from Mark now.
Yeah, it's a Radulich thing.
Fine, we like Mark.
Yeah.
But yeah, so apparently Machida deserves to get screwed because the judges screwed Shogun 4 years ago. That's the logic for
you. Yeah, I've read that somewhere else besides just Harris.
Even though Machida actually went on, exactly, because Harris is excused. Like that kid that Rob Everson beat. But the others, that was mean. But so Machida gets a rematch with Shogun, gets knocked the hell out. So he probably would have preferred to lose that decision against Shogun. And then gets screwed by against Rampage. And yet, 4 years later, no, it's okay.
I'm shocked Harris Shogun. Wasn't like, this was made up for the Henderson fight.
Actually, I was shocked for the Dan Henderson fight where Harris was like, you know, Dan thinks he won that fight, but I don't agree. I think Machida won. I was like, what?
Oh, wow.
Wow. It's somebody take over your body? I mean, that was really unexpected. Because I was looking forward to that. I was really looking forward to see what he has to say about this. But, yeah.
Viscardi, my boy. Viscardi and KO, this fucker. He's my new favorite fighter.
Okay, why?
That's his name, Viscardi and KO. Instead of Bacardi and Cola, that's an MMA roasted joke right there. Viscardi is going to celebrate with Bacardi.
Dude, stop. Actually, you know what? You just gave me an idea. I'm going to end every podcast for the considerable future with like 30 seconds of reading MMA roasted Twitter feed. Remember when we did that for Mike Pierce? Now it's yeah. MMA roasted. Actually, it's not MMA roasted. Each time I'll pick a different individual, maybe. Or when we feel like it. So let me see about that. Yeah, but go ahead. No, continue with your Viscardi jokes.
That's it. He's awesome because of his name. That was the card.
Are we done?
Yeah.
Okay. So the UFC announced that John Jones' toe will take on the Korean Zombie's shoulder at UFC 168.
I made that joke earlier.
Okay, seriously. The Korean Zombie's corner just told him that Kim Winslow was hotter than Ariane. This was seriously something I'm not making up. This is what he tweeted.
He didn't tweet that.
He didn't tweet that? All right. There, I'm going to retweet.
You.
I swear to God, I'm retweeting this shit.
I'll just
apparently,
to it.
Because he blocked me, I can't. So
I'll just
retweet
go to it.
Seriously, the Korean Zombie's corner just told him that Kim Winslow is hotter than Ariane. That's something a comedian tweeted.
He actually did tweet that.
Yeah. The Korean Zombie's chin is higher than Matt Riddle. Seriously, like, is there any a single pod joke that he hasn't abused against Nick Diaz when it comes to Nick Diaz and Matt Riddle? Like, they're so predictable right now. But yeah, you were saying?
That fucking Kim Winslow thing was just...
What the fuck does that even mean? What is it in reference to? It's
I
not
think
just
because
a joke.
Zombie's corner said he was doing well or something.
Oh, okay. Oh, wow.
But still.
That makes it worse. Because, like, so that's the best you can come up with? All right, the Korean Zombie's chin is higher than Matt Riddle. The last time Aldo lost, Fallon and Fox could still be standing up. Hilarious. Both Machida and his drink are pissed. That's a joke, he said. Both Machida and his drink are pissed. What an incredibly great pun.
Going back to what we were talking about, because we said we were going to bury this guy at the end of the show. Because I told you, I didn't follow him, and like, some people would retweet his shit. But I read that fucking text from last night column.
Oh my God. That was awful, wasn't it?
That was the absolute worst thing I think I've ever read on.
And that's something you had time to prepare for. Like, these tweets, they're super forced because for some reason he feels the need to provide content. Like, for him, he feels like he needs to tweet 20 times per day. And out of those 20, maybe 21 jokes are lame. I know that's mathematically impossible, but with MMA Roasted, it is. So, I mean, dude, you had time to prepare that nonsense.
I have to read some of this shit.
Even when Jeremy and I do like the fake fighters thing, we just essentially do it to be able to touch on different topics. And because we're lazy and don't want to come up with a common topic, with like a bit of humor, and we know it's not that funny. We're like not comedic. We don't go out and like put an entire. Essentially, it was a sketch. It was like a bit that he was doing.
Where we do fake quotes.
Yeah, and I mean, it's not like the whole point is not to be actually funny. It's in a sarcastic tone. But it's sarcastic, but we're mainly touching on different topics. That's the whole point. It's just a smart way, not smart. It's a slightly different way of just, shut up. It's a different way of just basically doing like a salad column.
It's a different
chicken salad. Yeah.
I like FoxSports.com has acquired another exclusive group iMessage from UFC Luminaries. God, that's.
So, yeah, read the nonsense that he wrote.
Dana White, all these people have iPhones. My joke was better than any of this, by the way, is that I don't believe every one of these people has an iPhone.
Yeah, I agree. Your joke was generally better.
That's not saying much, but still.
Yeah, I agree. Again.
So it's Dana White. He's excited, and then fucking Helwani is doing this bullshit, and then... Tail Sauna says, Ariel, your nose is so far up Dana's ass, you might as well give him a colonoscopy. Hilarious. Rampage in this bitch. Apparently Quentin Jackson was invited to this group thing. I don't know why, but he was.
Okay, just to provide context, he created like this whole imaginary discussion on iPhone. Like it's a private conversation where like Chael, John Jones, and like Rampage and Dana White are just talking while watching the fights, right?
Yeah.
Is that what it was? Yeah,
yeah.
Okay. Okay, go on.
I'm trying to find something fun.
You're not supposed to try something fun. That's the point.
No, well, I'm trying to find something like relevant because right now it's, oh, Kenny Florian says Eze Edwards is fighting Darren Cruikshank. You know, that's not funny. I'm trying to find something that's supposed to be funny, I should say. Cruikshank wins by...
Oh, read the Hernandez bullshit.
Oh, I know. I'm getting there. Cruikshank wins by split decision. How the fuck did two judges have it 30-27 for two different fighters? Chael Sonnen says one judge had it for three different fighters. Oh, man. Aaron Hernandez. This is what I don't get. It's fine if you want to try MMA comedy and fail at it. Don't try to insert like Aaron Hernandez and actual other sports. I guess maybe this is the MMA thing. You got to compare to other sports. Don't try to do this shit, though. But Aaron Hernandez somehow gets in on this. Says, Dana, do you think you can get these judges to work my trial? And Dana White says, will someone explain to me how the fuck Aaron Hernandez got in here? And Aaron Hernandez says, I got the number from Josh Rosenthal. I have to go. Bjorn Rebney's calling. What the fuck was the point of that?
I mean, Josh Rosenthal is going to jail for some drug-related offense, I think. So that's that reference. Bjorn Rebney, I mean, I guess, because I don't know. I don't know. Why am I even trying to make sense of this bullshit?
No, this is... I like this segment better. You try to make sense of these references.
No, I don't like this segment better. No.
I'm not saying that Melvin has demons, but he once went on Instagram and tried to snort it. John Jones tweets LOL.
Yeah, that was the thing. John Jones only tweets LOL the whole time.
Yeah. You're still a vegan after you eat that much leather, says Matthew.
Wow.
Ben Henderson's great comments were always God-related. That's original.
Dude. Lyoto Machida.
Vitor Belfort says, always bet on Jesus. Go ahead with your Lyoto Machida comment.
Should never go on The Bachelor since he hates to engage. See, it wasn't even relevant to this fight. Like, he treated it as if I was going, if it was taking place. And it's not like... Machida's unibrow just tested positive for growth.
What?
Some moron tweets at him because he retweeted it. You're back. Been waiting for your tweets. Always make the fights better. Get the fuck out of here. Who is this dude? Have to go. Okay. Seriously.
Oh,
Maria.
White,
I don't know who he's talking
to. Dana White blocked Randy Couture from the text chat.
Yeah, that's... That's
breaking
funny.
News, Salad Ariel Hawani.
Oh, you know who's the moron that tweeted this at him? Luis Godinot, whatever you pronounce, however you pronounce his family
that
name.
Fighter?
Yeah. The green-haired Diego Sanchez. Well, I mean, that makes sense. Maria looks like Dan Hardy went down on a pumpkin. Oh, God.
He looks like Peter Ortiz.
There's a new sex movie called The Magalesh where you think you are going to be amazing but only last 14 seconds. You only last 14 seconds. That's a joke. You're supposed... Oh my God. What the fuck is this?
I was trying
Vinny Magalesh, just act Roy Nelson to borrow one of his chins. Vinny Magalesh just cut himself for the UFC.
War Machine says my penis is burning.
Okay, actually, you know what? This is the most relevant. He said, damn, / have to go tell some jokes. Yeah, that's my reaction exactly when I read your jokes. Actually, I'm going to tweet that. He's like, damn, have to go tell some jokes. Enjoy the fights. Yeah, you know, if I'm as lame as he is, I would go like, damn, I have to tell some jokes. Seriously, this is a joke. All right, are you ready for this? This is like the don't fear me thing. Are you ready? All right, everybody. Let's go, baby. Remember, I started calling the crowd baby. Paul Wentello. All right. Joe Rogan could not be here tonight because he had to leave to question everything. Seriously.
That's Joe Rogan's show.
I know. I know what it is.
Oh.
I get the reference. I just don't get why this is funny.
Hilarious. That's new edge comedy that you're just not up on.
Uncle Creepy is touching Santos in a way that is not making him feel very good.
What? Oh, because his nickname's Uncle Creepy?
Yeah, Uncle Creepy is the nickname of a great fighter as well as the responsible, as well as the guy responsible for almost every stripper. Well, at least this is mildly creative.
Which one?
The uncle responsible for everything. It's not even creative. So she's abused by her uncle.
Yeah, that's not creative.
The Brazilian fans are not booing the fight. Chael Sonnen just entered the arena. Oh my god, that is awful. That is genuinely awful.
The Brazilian fans at one point actually, I don't know what fight it was, but they were egging on, I guess not egging on, but they wanted Vitor Belfort's wife to acknowledge them. And when she did, they went crazy.
Yeah, she's Joanna Pryor. Come on, she had her feet licked on national television.
I know. Why the hell not? I thought that was awesome. I don't remember what fight this happened, but they just got like this big reaction out of nowhere. And I saw in the background, it was because Vitor Belfort's wife stood up and waved. I was like, awesome.
Apparently, Brazilians booing Brazilian fighters are like whores booing Paris Hilton.
Right.
Yeah.
I like this new closer to end every show. It makes our material sound a lot better. You read tweets from this guy after every single event. Read his event tweets. And then that just makes us sound more awesome.
And here's the best joke. I just want to say thanks to all the fighters and people that have been supportive. Really appreciate it. That's my favorite line.
Yeah, I don't get the guy, but whatever. Maybe his humor is too cutting edge for me. All right, it's 3 a.m. here. I don't know why you're still. You took a nap at least. You know, some people had to work, go to the hospital to take care of their girlfriends, watch shitty fights, and then.
What a lackey!
What?
Just say what a lackey. If you're taking care of your girlfriend at the hospital every day. You know, that's what the nurse is there for. She gets paid for that shit.
Thanks.
It's a joke. By the way, I really don't mean to sound insensitive, and you know that.
All right, we're done with this fucking podcast. 2 hours! Why did it take so long? I think we paced this like the UFC paced this card.
Seriously, I think we talked about this card for like a combined half an hour. And
yeah, the rest of it was just tangents about nonsense.
Like, every time we do podcast post shows, this is what happens. Because I'm usually, like, dead tired, and it's really late, and this is what happens. But, I mean, this card did not deserve any better, so whatever. On the flip side, right after we finished the analysis on Machida and Davis, everybody's just going to tune off anyway, so that's cool.
Yeah, I don't know if we had anything cool after that. I think
Seaborg and Tito.
Yes. Yeah,
that's when we peaked.
And your racist joke.
No, I really hope everybody missed that one.
All right, folks, we're done. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Take care, everyone. The end.